You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
B105.
From the front yard to the backyard, it's time for In and Around the House on B105.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House. And it might be an interesting day for most of us here in the tri-state area. North of here, a little bit of snow in the forecast. I think those on my side of the river and south doesn't look like too much snow. And we'll talk a little bit about that forecast as well as some other things. And good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to have you.
Thank you. It is nice to be back. I missed you guys last week.
Yeah, you didn't miss the weather, though, man. Last Saturday was, we got in. I got in around 5 o'clock. I got in early. So, because I was worried about the snow and, you know, I knew you were gone. So, I really wanted to make sure I was here just to kind of make sure everything was running as smooth as it could. Don't know if it did, but we tried. But the snow was coming down and it was a weird day. It snowed and then it rained. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden the snow came again late and it looks like it's going to come again tonight.
It always changes in the Ohio Valley.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah. Last week, we had three seasons in 1 week because it was 65.
That's right.
And then we got real cold.
So that was spring, correct?
Yeah, that was spring. Then we kind of cooled down into like the upper 40s, which is fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got our snow on that Saturday, which was winter. The only thing we didn't have was summer.
That's good. That'll be here before you know it. So just don't be overly anxious to get it here.
Well, the first day of summer officially is 153 days.
Is that what it is?
I just looked it up. Oh, okay. I had to look it up. I wanted to know for sure. So, if you can believe, 153 days, that's all we got till we get to summer.
It rolls around quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not the kind of person that, I don't like it when it's really hot. I don't mind the cooler temperatures, but what's in the forecast for next week, I kind of cringe when I hear temperatures like that. And tomorrow night, we're supposed to get down to, 3 or 4 below?
Yeah, I think right now, according to the Weather Channel for the studio, you know, located in the studio, -5 is what it's saying.
I just look out the window, step outside, and then I'll come back in and give you the forecast.
Well, that's what it should. I mean, we woke up today, and I don't know how you felt. I woke up, I walked outside, I was like, I don't even need to start the truck. It felt warm.
It did not feel too bad.
They said it's only 36, but it felt like it was, I thought it was in the 40s.
Very interesting. And who's your meteorologist friend, or that you're acquainted with, or kind of know? What is her name?
Jennifer Catchmark.
Yeah, so I went out and checked out her, I don't know if it's really her blog or her site, but according to Jennifer, apparently Saturday 4 a.m. to Sunday 4 a.m. north of here, like Franklin County, Butler, Warren, and Clinton.
Yeah.
That's where some of the...
The heavy snow.
The snow was supposed to
So the northern part of our listener...
listening audience, yes.
Is going to get snow.
So I have to look at my list here because I don't know all the counties in Ohio. You probably know them a lot better than I.
I don't know them all, but I know a lot of them.
Yeah. I just know three: Kenton, Campbell, and Boone.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We're going to branch you out a little bit. No, you know Hamilton because you have to drive to it every Saturday.
I know where Hamilton is, but and then south
and
we
Claremont,
have
where we are.
Yeah, and then south we have Ripley, Dearborn, Hamilton, Claremont, Brown, and Adams. And wait a minute.
You're all over. That's not south.
South of the group that I mentioned that's going to get the snow today.
Oh, okay. That's what you meant.
This morning, we're all going to probably get something.
Right. I watched three of the four local stations last night after you and I talked, you know, about what we were going to do and all that stuff. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to watch because I want to see where they're at. Two of the three were 2 to 4 inches through Cincinnati, 5 to 8 inches north of 275, and 1 to 3 kind of south of the 275 loop.
Mm-hmm.
They were almost the exact same and almost the exact same on timing, which meant it's coming in a little later.
Right.
The one channel said they think we could get a little bit more, but they all did one thing exactly the same. We're not 100% sure where it's going. So, I mean, this must be a hard storm to predict because if it moves south by 20 miles, it totally changes who's getting what.
Now, what storm is this? Is there a name for this particular storm?
Yeah, there is.
We had Gigi.
It was Gia, I believe, wasn't it?
I thought was G-I-A? G or Gigi. I don't know.
Maybe.
Do you like the naming of the storms in the winter months?
You know, this time of year for a storm like that, no. But like the hurricane, I get it.
Is this one Harper?
It's something. Hey, I don't know.
Throw a little bit.
I'll look it up real fast.
Throw a little bit of that New York accent on it. You have it. Hoppa? Come on, Alex. I'm trying to get you in real quick.
See if I can do this. Harper.
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 Yeah. Is it Harper? I don't know. Anyway, I kind of think that's funny. You know, we're starting to name the winter storms. When did a Weather Channel start doing that? Do you know? Was it the last 2 or 3 years?
Oh, I think it's been for quite a while. I know they've been doing the hurricanes forever.
Yeah, I know that.
Because they'll tell you what those are years in advance.
Right. Well, anyway.
This one, I'm calling the polar vortex Tony.
There you go.
Because it's your fault it's coming. The cold weather's coming. We were doing fine until you left, and then you come back, and what happens? The weather tanks.
Well, it was
it's
warm.
Your fault.
It was warm where I was. I was in Atlanta.
Exactly.
So it was kind of nice down there. So.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it.
And then, hey, listen to this one. So guess what I came back to from Atlanta? That, to my surprise, walked down into the basement, and my hot water tank was leaking.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
Florida, come back in the summer, and mine did the same thing. Why is it when you're always gone?
I don't know.
Is it, and you just noticed it?
So, you know, I always make it a point to turn off the faucets to the wash machine, okay?
Okay.
And the hot water tank, usually it's not that big of a deal, but there it was.
How old was your tank?
Just shy of 6 years old, and as a matter of fact, I made the warranty, Bob, by 2 months.
No kidding.
I put it in, it was April 15th, actually tax day,
okay,
back in 2013.
Yeah.
I just squeaked in under the wire. I was considering, sometimes I think I'm really organized and sometimes I'm not. But
right.
I went right to my folder where I keep all of my, you know, manuals and receipts and so forth, and there it was. I didn't have to go hunting for it. I was like, ooh, yeah, this baby's still under warranty.
That's really good.
And I will say this, my hot water tank is a Rheem, mm-hmm. and when I contacted Rheem, they were so professional and Johnny on the spot. They just said, hey, take it back. Here's your authorization number, and we'll replace it at no charge, and you still get a new warranty.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
I want to commend Rheem for that. I did not know if they prorated the warranty by any means, but I was
a lot
very,
of them, I think, do.
I was very happy with that, and I couldn't complain. And, you know, I just went and picked it up and put it in, and, you know, it's a power vent, so it's not too bad to change one out.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost the same size as the one that I removed, and it was rather easy. I was getting ready to call our good friends at Herman Services, Jason.
Right.
And just start picking his brain, because I'm seriously considering the next time a tankless water heater.
Right. Well, I've heard mixed things about that. Mm-hmm. I like my, you know, yours is the same mine. I think it's a power vented, gas power vented water heater.
Right.
And, you know, I've got a family of four and a teenage son who take long, long showers. But, you know, 50 gallons and it's worked well. My last one lasted 13 years.
Wow.
So I don't know how long this one's going to last. The only thing I had, and I was surprised you didn't have it, so I'd like to ask Herman Services too. How come I have an expansion tank and you don't?
I don't know. I don't want to get into that. Is it code? That's
well,
a
but your house is a little older than mine, I think.
I think the newer homes, you have to have an expansion
I think that's what
tank,
it is.
And I think if you have it installed and pay somebody to install it. Now, things are a little bit different.
Oh, I may have just got you in trouble, didn't
I? In Kentucky. No, in Kentucky, you know, you're allowed to do your own wiring, your own plumbing, and you don't have to have things inspected.
Well, you can get your duct tape out in a 5-gallon bucket and make your own expansion tank.
Well, we do that in Kentucky often, yes. Kentucky Chrome.
That's right.
Nothing better than duct tape.
I've seen your artwork at the finest, buddy.
But, some of it's on my bumper, chrome bumpers and so forth. But I don't know where and when that expansion tank thing came into play.
Yeah.
So did you install yours, your last water heater? Or did you?
I had somebody install it, and I had my tank, but my tank, I've actually replaced, I had it replaced once, and then I personally replaced it myself because it sprung a leak. So mm-hmm. what happened was they put a new tank in when they put my hot water heater in, and all of a sudden I went downstairs and there was like a little water on the basement floor. And I'm like, well, this is weird. Where is this coming from? And I start kind of, you know, sticking my hand out, almost like, you know, when it's raining, you kind of wait to see if you feel the rain.
Right.
Because, I mean, it was, you could see it kind of almost a little splash. And it happened to be whoever put my tank in, there must have been a little pinhole, and they actually soldered it, and then they painted the tank. So I don't know if it was old tank refurbished. I don't know. But it blew that.
Trying to pull the wool
so
over
the balloon
eye.
Inside somehow leaked or something. So I ended up replacing it myself.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to do. You just basically screw one off, you know, and then put the new one back in. But so I've actually had three of those.
So this is the expansion tank.
Yeah, the expansion tank. The hot water heater, I'm only on my second one. And it did the same as yours. I just came home from vacation one time. And
interesting.
Underneath, you just see water running to the drain. It's like, oh.
This time I put a pan under mine.
And did
I, Yeah. I have floor drains, but I've, obviously it's not level and it didn't flow in the right direction. But anyway, that's what I came home to. So, oh, well.
At least you got it fixed.
I got it fixed, that's for sure.
I was impressed that you did it yourself. I really was. I had no idea you could do that.
I can do
it. You are a man of many talents.
Sometimes.
We won't tell anybody.
Oh, yeah, hold on to that thought. We got to take a quick break. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And a great way to stay in touch with us is via our Facebook page. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show this morning. Also, if you want to catch a past show, you can certainly go out to our website and listen in on the podcast. And if you have any questions with anything going on in and around your landscape and you don't want to telephone us or call in, you can certainly just send us an email at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com or just dial in 749-B105 and we'll chat about it. So, Bob, we were just talking about a little bit of the weather that's headed our way this morning and, later today and all through tomorrow and Sunday. Mm-hmm. And just be careful out there when you're traveling about and so forth and use caution. And sometimes, Bob, you see those people with four-wheel drive utility vehicles that think that they're invincible. And when
they get through the snow, but they don't stop any better.
No.
And I drive a four-wheel drive, especially snow plowing, and I can go just about anywhere I want. I've never had an issue getting stuck in snow. Ever with my four-wheel drive, because being out plowing, we're usually out in the thick of it, kind of when it's coming to an end, but there's a lot of snow out there, and the roads aren't clear yet. But I'm telling you, it's still icy underneath that snow, and you just, no matter what you're driving, you're not going to stop, so take your time.
Take your time, be a little cautious, and leave a little bit of room between you and the car in front of you, and I think all will be well.
And I think everybody up north is going to have a lot sooner than the ones in the south.
That's what it looks like. Yeah. We'll see what happens. We'll see how it all pans out.
See how Harper, it is name. The name is Harper.
Is it Harper?
It is Harper.
I kind of thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, speaking of snow, I think this is a very, very interesting topic. And I, for one, use it very little, if at all. And I use it primarily around the garden center and so forth, just for safety reasons. But when it comes to melting snow, are you a fan or are you not a fan of some of the ice melts? What's your thought on some of those?
I mean, I use them. I just think most people who use them, they grab a 50-pound bag and they use way more than they need. I mean, you're not supposed to use a ton of product. It's supposed to last a long time, and you don't need as much as you think because the product really does work. If you have a lot of plants or somewhere where water is going to run off, or you have to snow plow or push snow into where all your mulch beds are. If you don't have to use it, don't.
Right.
Because it is toxic to plants. Not all of them, and we'll talk about it.
Well, you can get
general rock salt can cause some serious damage to plants, or if it dries and gets dusty, and then the wind blows it up onto the trees, and you get built up on the trees, you can have some issues.
Right. Yeah, my driveway at home, personally, I have never, I've been in my house over 25 years, I have never used rock salt.
Not once, huh?
No.
Because that's why your driveway still looks good.
It's still there. At some point in time, maybe down the road, I might have to replace it, I'm sure.
Some of your driveway out by the street melts a lot faster than up by the house, doesn't it? Because the way the sun hits?
Well, there's a little bit more sun exposure out, because my house faces north, so yeah. To a degree, yeah. But usually... some of that might be a result of the fine job that the guys in for the city of Taylor Mill do with snow removal.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes as those guys go up and down the street, little bit starts getting right out there at mm-hmm. the edge of the driveway in terms of rock salt.
And my house face is kind of southeast, almost dead
so
south.
So you get a pretty good melt off, don't you?
I get great melt off. Even if it's cold, like mm-hmm. today, if it snows tonight and then the sun, I know it's supposed to be freezing cold tomorrow, but if the sun were to come out, I would get some melting even as cold as it's going to be. Now, if I get into like Tuesday or Wednesday, it's supposed to be 44. If I had any snow and it's not ice, it'll be gone in a day. Like I'll go to work, come home, and it'll be gone. Mm-hmm. So it just melts it that fast because the concrete warms up and then melts. But see, that's something interesting about melting ice. the rock salt, I think, and I was under the misconception for many years that rock salt just melted the ice. But it actually lowers the temperature of the,
the melting point.
The water, the melting point, what it freezes down to about 15 degrees.
Well, it lowers the freezing point, I should say. From, what, 32 to 15?
From 32, instead of freezing and turning to ice, down, it's got to be 15 degrees.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting.
And then as it melts, as it runs, that's basically warmer water. It's almost like having warmer water run underneath the ice that's below it. So it actually melts that a little bit faster as well. So it's interesting the way all this works. But, you know, I always cautious people, if you have a new driveway, don't use anything.
I like some of the names of some of the ice melts, though. I think that's funny stuff. Like
Blue Heat. Yeah.
Snow Joe. Ice Eater, Ice Slicer, Safety Salt, you know, all those names, they're all salts. No matter what it is that you're using, you know, sodium chloride, which is actually rock salt, calcium chloride,
which is
magnesium chloride, they all are still a salt.
They're salts. So they warm up the ice. Basically, they warm it warms it up to melt it, basically, or lowers the temperature. So
lowers
it melts
the temperature,
it,
so. Right. But, so, you know, I think if I was to use anything on a driveway, I think I would steer away from rock salt, which is still, I mean, it's good, but whenever you apply these particular products, I guess my main point is just when things melt off, try and remove it so it doesn't sit on there for a prolonged period of time. And therefore, I think, you know, since concrete's porous, you know, you reduce the risk of the concrete starting to deteriorate over time. It doesn't happen right away or rapidly.
You'll get pitting, I think. Like, that's what I've had in mind. I've had little pits where there's, like, the rock salt bag had a little hole in it. I didn't know it. Maybe I put a bigger pile and it sat there for a little longer. The other thing is when you do put the rock salt down and then you go to shovel, don't shovel it on your plants.
No.
Because that chemical is in there. And a little bit is fine. No, well, let me say, it really all can be toxic. But if you have a little bit in the plants, they can adapt. If all of a sudden you've got a giant pile of rock salt and then you throw it on top of plants, even though it's in snow, it's still going to get down into the soil and cause some damage.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point there. I have worked with customers in the past, and you know, for example, too, even right up there, right there at the city of Park Hills, as you go up into the park, they always do those really nice annual planting beds that are right next to the road, and they did have some issues a couple of times, you know, with rock salt. You know, some of those winters where we have a lot of snowfall. A lot of times that sodium, you know, that buildup, you know, that can wreak a havoc on some of the annuals and other more salt-sensitive types of plants.
Well, the other thing
that's
is...
That's a good point you brought up there, because you know, it's definitely a problem.
You throw all that rock salt down, then you drive cars over it, and it becomes dust. And we've all seen it. You know, if we have a giant snowstorm tonight, depending on where you're at and how much salt they put down, you'll see all of a sudden it starts to dry in a day or two, and you're driving down the highway, and you got the salt dust.
You know, does the brine really work that what the state will use? And they'll use that liquid. They'll take it and spray it along the road surfaces prior to an oncoming winter storm.
I've never personally used it, but I'd say yes, it has to work because it makes a difference.
So obviously what it's doing, it's lowering that melting or that freezing point.
At the beginning stages, so it helps them plow and get rid of the stuff quicker.
Right. That's very interesting. So, I wonder how cost effective that really is. We had somebody call up one time on a past show that had talked about it that worked for the state, if I'm not mistaken. But they said it was very effective. And, you know, I could see it if it's lowering that that freezing point and getting that snow off initially. That's a huge benefit. What about the safety element for pets? Do you buy into that?
I definitely do. I mean, it's same thing with even fertilizers in the lawn. I think it kind of makes a difference that we got to at least think about our pets.
Now,
you know, somewhat.
I will say this. You know, pets will, you know, they always have the tendency when they're out and they come back in. You know, they're always, especially dogs and, you know, cats as well, they're always licking their paws. They're grooming themselves to a degree. I would have to seem to think that, yeah, there's that element that's still being on their paw pads.
Absolutely.
But I read something in Consumer Reports is, you know, be a little dubious about some of the claims that you'll hear with various ice melt companies as far as things being pet friendly.
Well, just because the label says safe doesn't necessarily mean it's 100%
safe. Always be suspect. But I really don't know if those claims are true or if they aren't true. And a lot of us, you know, a lot of homeowners have pets. And, boy, they love their pets, too. And by all means, people will take the precautionary measures to make sure that nothing bad happens to their pets. But I always wondered, are those products really what they're supposed to be?
Well, I looked up some of that stuff before the show because, we knew we were going to talk about some. There, I didn't realize there was so much stuff. If you go to, some of your pet stores and, online, you'll see, Chewies and things like that. They actually have some safety salt that are recommended more for pets.
Chewies. So is that a pet store, right?
That's like the online one.
Well, I told you I would see, occasionally I see mail come to Jackson Florist and Garden Center.
Yeah, cat gets
for
mail.
Blackberry. He gets cat mail from Chewies.
Your cat gets cat mail.
Gets
that's pretty impressive. That's
gets
pretty,
mail. Goes yeah. through the U.S. Postal Service, gets mail.
I'll have to tell you a funny story later about me and mail. So I got a funny mail one, too. I have a funny story for that.
All right. Well, we'll hold on to that thought. We have to take another quick break. In and around the house with Tony Works. And if anything you want to chat about, we're going to start talking about some landscaping things. And also coming up, we're going to talk about how can you bring color indoors. We'll tell you how to do that. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And if you're just getting up, welcome. Hope you have a hot cup of joe or maybe some hot tea. It's going to be one of those kind of days, especially the next couple of days. It's going to really get cold, so brace yourself. Hang in there, and we'll talk more about that later on in the program. But a lot of us, this time of year, we just you just look outside, and it's just always gray, Bob. It's just gray, 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 gray. And I know gray's been one of the biggest decorating colors in recent years. But when I look outside, to me, gray is not a decorating color. And I start thinking about color and how can I bring color indoors. And there's a number of different things that you can do as homeowners. Just to add a little bit of pop of color inside, bring it into the kitchen, into the living room, various areas. And one of those things that I think highly of, and you get a lot of bang for your buck as far as longevity is concerned with the blooms, are the Phalaenopsis orchid.
Yeah, and, pretty, aren't they?
They're gorgeous, and they're not as difficult to grow as a lot of people kind of think that they are. We're always led to believe that orchids are very finicky and picky and very just tough in general to grow, and really they are not. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, as a matter of fact. And on our Facebook page, I don't know if you caught any of the photographs I posted of some of the Phalaenopsis orchids that we have in the greenhouse, but there's so many different colors to choose from when it comes to the Phalaenopsis orchid. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful plant. And just a couple of things that come into play with orchids, and it's light and it's water. And we'll talk about the other elements too when we talk about temperatures and humidity and fertilization and soils and so forth that they prefer to be in. But the orchid is a wonderful, wonderful plant. Have you ever had any indoors or
I have not used any indoor. I love the plant. I think it's just a beautiful plant, but I have personally not used it. But it just comes with the different colors that you get. I think the interest is the long stem and then the beautiful flower as it extends.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I found for me is it is a little temperature sensitive to the cold. Like if it's cold, it's not good.
Oh yeah, it's a tropical type of plant. Uh-huh. There's no doubt about it. But
right.
This time of year, what I like about orchids is you can get anywhere from 2 to 5 months of a bloom period. And when I say that, when you're purchasing an orchid, go out to one of your local garden centers, year-round garden centers or nurseries that sell orchids, and look for those that have a lot of buds on them.
Yes.
And, those buds over time, they'll just slowly start to open and fully develop, and you'll have this wonderful bloom, and they last for months. And this time of year, it's not really that dicey or tricky as far as the amount of light that you can get to your orchid. Mm-hmm. Actually, the Phalaenopsis orchid, which is also commonly known as the moth orchid, kind of looks like a moth in flight.
Correct.
This time of year, putting it near any of the windows in your home is not really an issue. Typically, in the summer months, we're always saying, hey, put it on the north side or east side of your house near a window to get some light. But this time of year, with the sun in the southernmost part of the sky, that little bit of that southern exposure is not too bad.
Yeah, south or east?
Yeah, south, southwest. But don't
west. Okay.
But don't put it right up against the glass or near it. Just a little bit away.
Well, don't you think with the cold of -5 because we lose a lot of energy and temperatures through our windows.
Well, it depends on what kind of windows you have.
That's true.
If you have really good windows, double pane, if I touch the double pane glass at my house, I have Anderson windows. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that cold transfer.
Okay.
Some of the single panes you will, or some of your older windows, if it's drafty and so forth, you definitely, what you just stated.
What do you think the minimum temperature would be for the orchid? What would you say? Because I kind of have my opinion, but.
You know, what I've read before in the past on the National Orchid Society's mm-hmm. website, it's 60 degrees.
Yeah. Okay. That's where I was going.
Yeah. They're a little sensitive to some of those cooler temperatures.
Because you got them in the greenhouse at Jax's.
Right. And we keep it about 68.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it'll vary a little bit.
It'll vary a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, we have like in the one house, it's a 40% shade house. They do remarkably well. So there you go. They can take, you know, they don't need that much light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like light. Don't get me wrong. And, you know, what's interesting about the orchid, you know, really, Bob, they're epiphytes. You know, they're air plants.
Mm-hmm.
Although they're in a medium of some sort, which you would preferably have them in a bark medium.
Right. Lightweight, right?
Lightweight, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, anything that's kind of heavy. From a soil standpoint, it's not good for orchids.
And their root system's really small, isn't it?
Yes, it's very small.
Very small.
But you'll get a lot of air roots off of it, and mm-hmm. people, sometimes homeowners will feel compelled to, like, oh, I need to repot this.
Leave it,
because those air roots are very, very important to that orchid.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the air roots operate or work is they work in such a way that they're pulling moisture in from the humidity levels in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So those air roots, it's very important that we don't smother those or hide those. Allow those to do what they're supposed to do.
And that's what's nice about this particular plant, because if you need it indoors and you're one of those who really kind of don't do a good job with indoor plants, this one's pretty easy as long as you get in the right spot.
It really is. And they're not that difficult. Like I said, the real dilemma or turning point that could take an orchid in the wrong direction, so to speak, is overwatering that orchid.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I want to say this, that orchids, you know, the Phalaenopsis, it does need moisture, but you can give it moisture as long as you have that barky mix to where the water flows right through it.
Right.
It's not sitting in it.
So would you recommend a saucer with these particular things, or do you just recommend like a paper towel?
No, a saucer, and with that saucer, something that it's not porous, maybe a glazed type of pottery type saucer.
Kind of absorb the moisture slowly?
Well, the glazed pottery will not allow the moisture to go through it like it would a clay saucer.
Okay.
So you take a glazed saucer, mm-hmm. put just a little bit of gravel in that saucer and a little bit of water,
mm-hmm.
sit your orchid on that saucer on top of the gravel, and those air roots will pick up that moisture from the water that's in the saucer. So you're getting that humidity element about it, because they love humidity.
Right. And that's sometimes difficult in the wintertime in our houses because things start to dry.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's where you got to have a humidifier, or you got to control some of that. Where, you know, that's the best. I actually haven't ever heard anybody put the gravel in the bottom of that glazed saucer. That's the first time somebody's ever said that to me specifically that way. And that's a really good idea. I hadn't thought of that myself, because then that way the moisture, the plant can kind of draw up as it needs it. It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's right there.
And, you know, and I apologize. I really wasn't thinking, you know, I was out of town. I really wasn't thinking about the Phalaenopsis orchid and so forth until the other day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking I'm in a greenhouse. I'm like, oh, those are beautiful. I just need to take a couple photographs and post them on Facebook.
Sure, they are.
But we what's really cool, we have a Greater Cincinnati Orchid Society here locally.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was apologizing about is they just recently had a meeting open to, you know, the public or new members wanting to join. I think it was on the 8th of January.
Oh, we just missed it.
Just missed it.
Yeah, and I think you can go to www.cincinnatiorchids.org.
Yes.
I think that's their website, so you can really get some cool information from them as
Most
well.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So, Jeff, definitely take that into consideration if you like orchids. They're not difficult to grow at all. And, you know, there's other orchids, too, we're going to talk a little bit about, but not into any great detail. It's just the one that the Phalaenopsis that we're most accustomed to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the better ones to grow for most people. And then when you become better and more, you know, well-versed with the orchids, and I'm not, you know, I know things about orchids, but I'm not that detailed into the orchid world.
Sure.
But it gets really, really interesting. And then that's when you can start talking about the Oncidiums, the Cymbidiums, which is the one that we'll use a lot for the florist for various corsages and so
right.
forth.
Mm-hmm.
You have Dendrobiums. So there's so many different orchids out there, so many species, thousands of species. But this one in particular, check it out on our Facebook page, the Phalaenopsis orchid. And, you know, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with the orchid, you know, what some of the things you need to take care of or consider taking into consideration when it comes to fertilization, repotting, and so forth. So hang in there with us, and we got to take another quick break. B105, 749 B105, Tony Works, In and Around the House. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And if you're just joining us this morning, welcome. And Bob Bard is co-hosting the show with me again, and he's from Bard's Nursery. And this time of year, it's just you get into that you start feeling those winter doldrum kind of feelings, Bob, you know. And we're talking about bringing color indoors. Mm-hmm. And we just were discussing in the last segment about the colorful Phalaenopsis orchid and so forth. And I just wanted to touch base on some of the things we need to take into consideration when we're growing the orchid indoors. And, you know, water is one of those that's critical for the Phalaenopsis. And that's because they do not have any water storage types of organs other than their foliage.
Right.
You know, even though it's kind of nice green foliage, you can't let them dry out. So we do need to give them water sometimes. And
right.
It's so, so important. But on the flip side, we don't want to overwater them either. So
they'll drown.
Oh, the root system will decay.
It's just gone because there isn't that much.
Right.
Yeah.
So you want to water thoroughly and do not water again until completely nearly dry. So a good drink and then back off and let it go to the dry side and a good drink. And that's with most anything. I would always rather you err on the side of dryness, Bob, than it being too wet. That's
I think in, indoor plants and even annuals for the most part, you know, are kind of that way.
Right.
I mean, for the most part, succulents, you know, they're the same way. You know, they like to be drier than they do wet.
But even though, you know, the succulent has that fleshy skin that holds moisture, mm-hmm. you'll see it shrivel a little bit. And that's a telltale sign. Hey, you need to water this.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take long.
But it doesn't take long to drown those either.
No, not at all. And during the summer months, you know, when there's warmer temperatures, you may water your orchid just a little bit more often. Water only in the morning, so that allows for the leaves to dry by the end of the day. You don't want it to, you know, those leaves to be wet going through the overnight hours. You know, that prevents any type of decay or any type of rot mm-hmm. or water spots and so forth or diseases. So water in the morning, it's always a good time to do that. And we're talking about they love the humidity levels, the higher humidity levels. Ideally, the range between 50 and 80%. Humidity is ideal for orchids. Obviously, you know, in the summer months, we got a lot more humidity than that range right there.
It's a little difficult this time of year in the winter. I actually have a humidity gauge
inside the
house. And, you know, you can watch it in the summertime. That thing is off the charts. You know, that's when I'm running the dehumidifier, you know, but this time of year.
Where is it now? Did you look at it recently?
I think it's at 40%.
40?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where you want to be, according to the guys from Arlinghouse.
Yeah, because if you get too low, then I start the static.
Right.
You know, static
on
everything. Yeah, dry skin, everything.
Stuff, yeah.
You know, but if it gets too high, especially in my basement, if it gets too high, that I can always tell because it gets a musty smell. It gets that basement smell, if you know what I mean. So I go hit the dehumidifier, and it just cleans
it's
up.
Amazing how much water they'll pull out of the air.
It is.
It's crazy, mm-hmm. crazy. And the orchid and its root system will do just that as well. It's like a dehumidifier. Those roots work in that same fashion, and they'll pull that moisture right out of the humid air.
So would you fertilize your orchid?
I recommend fertilizing your orchid twice a month, especially when the weather's warmer.
Yeah.
And when orchids are actively growing and when they're blooming.
So what are you using? Are you using more of a liquid where you mix, just put a little bit in there, like a Jax or Monty's or something like that?
More of a liquid. Anything that's like about a 30-10-10 analysis.
Okay.
So
that could be like even an acid food then.
Yes.
And okay.
Actually, some of your acidic fertilizers, mm-hmm. they are good. They are good for orchids.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's not a bad way to look at it. And, you know, if your orchids are in a heavy type of a bark medium mix, You can use a little higher nitrogen. When I said that 30,
right?
And only do it when you're in a heavy bark mix. If it's kind of got a little bit more soil to it, then you want to kind of lower that to like a, maybe a 10, 30, 20.
Okay. We're going to get a, try to put a little more, right. Root development, so to speak.
Well, and I also like to use that 10-30-20 because it has a little bit more phosphorus in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at that particular fertilizer at the point when the orchid is finished blooming or it's coming out of its rest period.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm trying to bring it back into bloom again so it starts setting up bud. So I'm going to start using a different type of fertilizer with a higher middle number, and that's phosphorus, mm-hmm. to get those bloom buds to start developing on that orchid. Now, I don't like to cut back those stems when they're finished blooming. I don't like to cut them all the way back down to the soil surface or down into the plant. I like to go back to a nodule, a node,
mm-hmm.
on that stem about halfway down, and I'll cut it just about a quarter of an inch at a 45 degree angle
above
that nodule. And I'm looking for a nodule, Bob, that's going facing outward away from the plant. That's the direction that new stem is going to grow in once it starts developing.
Right.
If you cut one, it's where the nodule is going towards the inside, that's the direction that's
going to grow into itself.
It's going to grow into itself. Exactly.
Yeah. So you won't get quite the pretty show either.
That's right. And when it comes to potting your orchid, I like to do that in the springtime, and I like to do it when they're not in bloom. I do not want to disturb the orchid plant while it's blooming because, you know, you're going to stress it out. And just use some sort of a bark mix. And if you want to repot your orchid, about every 2 to 3 years, maybe.
Right.
They like to be a little root bound.
They make orchid soils.
Yes, they do.
You can buy those from somebody who's selling orchids. You probably can buy the soil from them as well. And definitely that's the soil we would recommend. And that's what it's for.
That's what it's for.
It's developed that way.
And, there are also orchid pots.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the orchid pots?
I'm not.
They're pots that have, like, slits in the side or holes in the side.
Mm-hmm.
So you can still get air to those roots that are inside that pot, in addition to those air roots that come out over the pot.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then there's the key why you don't overwater.
Right.
Because it's going to run everywhere.
It's going to run out anyway. And something that a lot of people will do, and I'm sure a lot of people will argue this with me, you'll hear a lot of people say, I just put an ice cube on mine. You know, I'm not all about the ice cube. You can do it. If it works for you, go ahead and continue doing so. But when that ice cube is touching those air roots, think about it. That plant, when it's in its native habitat, ice is not coming in contact with those roots.
Right. It's definitely not meant for cold.
Right. It's not meant for cold. I like to use just tepid water, you know, distilled water too sometimes, you mm-hmm. know, or boil water, let it cool down, and then just pour it into an old milk jug.
Right. And you have it room temperature.
Then you have it at room temperature. And there you have it.
So there you go.
So check out our Facebook page if you're wanting to bring in some color indoors. The Phalaenopsis orchid is one of the plants that I think of, that especially this time of year, that will give you a lot of bang for your buck and a lot of bloom time. Also, you know, Bob, there's the Kalanchoe, which people also call the Kalancho.
Right.
That's another great indoor house plant that will give you some great color. A lot of people like the, are you familiar with the Anthuriums?
I am, actually.
That is really a cool, you know, tropical plant. It gets a colorful leaf on it with like this little pronged flower bloom that comes up and extends off the leaf.
Mm-hmm.
That is a long blooming type of plant too that will add a lot of pizzazz or give you a little bit of color indoors.
Don't you think a lot of people struggle more with indoor than they do outdoor plants, the average person?
I do. And
why do you think that is?
For a couple of reasons. One, when it comes to watering,
mm-hmm.
because indoor, especially during the summer months, it's still relatively cool because most of us are running air conditioned.
Right.
Okay. So we got to take another quick break. Great question. Keep that thought in mind. We'll continue this conversation when we come back. If you have any questions about anything going on in and around your house, feel free to give us a call. 749-B105, Tony Works, In and Around the House. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we're talking indoor plants. We're talking about things that are blooming, things that will bring you some wonderful color, especially during this time of the year. You know, as you look outside, it's just always gray.
Well, it was gray yesterday.
Yes, it was.
I mean, it was just, there's no sun in the greenhouse. You know, we at the nursery, we like sun because then all of a sudden the greenhouse feels warmer. You know, we're starting to fill our pots for spring, for our spring flowers, because, you know, those are going to be coming here in February. And so, I mean, it's kind of a fun time, even though it's gray at the garden center, because the smell of all this dirt. So, like, all our hanging baskets were pre-filling, you know. So there's, like, I think there's 925 or something like that. And we're pre-filling all the pots, so when the plugs comes, we can plug them. But it's still just not the same because it's so gray.
And, you know, when you smell that dirt, you can smell the dirt. It smells so good.
Well, it's all confined in the greenhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, and we're talking about pallets upon pallets upon pallets of dirt, you know. But it's still been gray. It's just gray. When the sun's out, you know, then it's great. Then you start to feel like spring's coming.
But the last two weekends, we've had cloud cover. It's been gray. It's been just snowy. It's been cold. And Tina just asked me yesterday, she's like, when was the last time we saw a little bit of sun?
Well, it was probably before, well, when you were in Atlanta. But for us, it was last week. I mean, when it was 60 degrees, I mean, let's face it, 65 and sunny, it felt great. I mean, you took your sweatshirt off and you're outside and the sun's just hitting your skin. And it
feels good.
It just felt good. But, you know, we talked about in December, the shortest day of the year. It's really nice to start seeing a couple minutes added to your day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it hasn't been that long. It's only been about a month, you know, a little less. But that extra 20 minutes when the sun's out starts to make a big difference.
When you can put a little sunshine on you, it's all good, Bob.
That's right.
It's all good. And we have with us Diane. Good morning, Diane. How are you?
Morning. I'm fine. How are you?
We are doing wonderful. Where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm in Dillonvale, Ohio.
Dillonville. All right. So what's going on? What are you thinking?
Well, my husband and I are considering building a house when we retire
mm-hmm.
in Northeast Ohio. And when you do that, where would you start with landscaping? I mean, all I know is that you always have to make sure the land is sloped away from the foundation. But as far as the dirt and planting grass and all that sort of thing, which we want to do on our own.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you think we need to start?
You know, that's a great question, especially as a new homeowner or you're building new construction. You know, you get to start from ground zero. You're not reworking something that is existing. And, you know, once the construction of the home is finished and so forth and you get everything graded out, you know, as that grading process takes place, and Bob, feel free to chime mm-hmm. in anytime. One of the first things that I would consider first and foremost is bringing in some really good topsoil.
Yes, some shredded topsoil. You're going to use that kind of with the soil that is existing, because the plants that you are going to eventually install and the lawn you're going to install are going to need to adapt to the soil that you have. So you don't want to dig a big giant hole and then fill it all with topsoil, because typically our clay won't allow that to drain as well as it should. So you're going to want to bring in some shredded topsoil to create your beds and then kind of mix in, so to speak, with the soil that you have. But even before that, when you get to where your plans for the house are developed, you could even take that to a landscape designer and he can actually help design a landscape for you, so you can get an idea of what things are going to look like and what type of plants. That'll give you a little time to research it to make sure you're getting exactly what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, I think that's a good place to start with the shrubbery part.
Right. You can have your architect provide some plans to you and actually know how and where the front of the home is facing and the directions, you know, around mm-hmm. the home. And Diane, that would give you a really great starting point. And another little tip, you know, and I did this when we built years ago, I would go out to my house every day, and a lot of times you'll find where builders will start pushing brick and debris and, you know, maybe wood and chunks of various things up close to the foundation. And all of a sudden when you're digging around the house and you're starting to plant, it's like, oh, look what I just found.
Mm-hmm.
Get that stuff away from the foundation. Does that make sense?
Happened when we built our garage a few years back. The person that we had doing it, you're right, all that crappy chunks of concrete that were left
mm-hmm.
over
mm-hmm.
from him pouring concrete, he buried it, and I ended up unburying it and pitching it.
Right. Now, Dillonville, that's up, you said northeast, that's over almost near Pittsburgh, isn't it?
Well, Ashtabula County.
Okay.
Our kids both live up that way, so...
It's kind of, you know, kind of you would go, you could take Columbus and take 70 all the way out towards Pennsylvania. But it's south of like Akron and Canton and all that area, correct?
Well, north of Akron.
It is north of Akron.
Yeah, we just go up 71 and get on 90.
Okay. All right. So, I'm not familiar with their soil up there, but one thing you want to find, I do know that it's going to be a little different consistency than our yellow clay here in kind of the Cincinnati area. So, you know, when you do amend the soil up there, you know, you might find a contractor who is shredding topsoil kind of in that area, so the consistency is somewhat similar. Mm-hmm. And definitely, I would take those plans to a designer and let them start kind of giving you a plan, and then you can research those plants. Because you're going to find, and you probably already have, that you have certain plants that you really like. And up where you are, those winters can maybe be a little harder than they are here, because I believe that's a zone or two off of us. So, you know, you want to make sure you're getting the right plants, but you also want to make sure you're getting plants that are going to adapt well to Dillonville. And I think if you get a designer, somebody that kind of works in that area, they should have no problem helping you with the right amount of plants and the best specific species for your area.
Okay.
Let us know how it goes, Diane.
Okay. Not going to build for another few years. I'm not retired yet, but
oh, okay, can't come soon enough, can it?
Tell me about it, Tony. All right, thanks for your
advice. You have a great weekend.
You
all
too.
Right, bye.
Bye.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. We got to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we've been talking all about all kinds of stuff this morning. And obviously, I think the big topic is snow.
I was going to say, we're not talking about the S word.
No.
Let's not talk about the four-letter S word.
Well,
snow.
It's kind of in the forecast. And what really concerns me the most, Bob, are the colder temperatures that I'm seeing in the upcoming week. And tomorrow night, we're supposed to be bottoming out at around a -3, -4, below zero.
Yep.
That is cold. I don't think we were below zero once at all last year. Do you remember? Oh,
I thought it was cold last year.
Well, we had a few those moments where we were in the single digits, the low single digits.
When you went
to
Atlanta, it got cold again last year, too. And when you were into Vegas, it was cold. Because I remember being in here with Ernie, and it was cold.
I know one thing. It was cold when I was in Atlanta last year, because that's the first time I was ever in Atlanta and saw it snow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Exactly, because it was cold here.
That was the first time I've ever seen it snow in all the times, all the years I've been going to Atlanta.
I was really worried about getting all the snow plowing done, getting here to the studio, you know, all of that stuff. But, you know, it worked itself out. But, you know, this storm that's coming, Harper, it's Harper, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's named, Harper.
And you looked it up.
That's right.
They've been naming storms since 2012.
Yeah.
You know, I really didn't pick up on it, but.
Yeah, but it's a big storm. I mean, there's a lot of rain, a lot of moisture, and it looks like, you know, hopefully we're not going to get the 12 to 15 inches that maybe some places are going to get. But, we could get more rain right now.
I will tell you this. The quick melt-off that we had from what you guys received last weekend, I don't like to see that, because really snow acts as an insulator.
Yeah, I hope it does snow a little bit before these -5 come, because it will actually help the plants.
That's my point, because that helps tremendously. And last year, when we were flirting near zero a couple of different times, you know, when we're getting into those low single digits, we didn't have any snowfall on the ground.
Right.
And that wreaked havoc on a lot of you know, plants.
We had up and down temperatures, remember?
Mm-hmm.
We had the yo-yo effect of temperatures, and we're kind of getting that now, because Tuesday's back up, Wednesday near 40 in the 40s, then we're back down again next week, and next Saturday they're talking about, you know, single digits again at night.
-5 tomorrow night's what I'm seeing on this on my phone weather app.
Who are you? Which one are you looking at?
I
use a bunch of different apps.
I'm just looking at the Cincinnati app.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. But anyway, it's going to be below zero. And then we're looking at low single digits for Monday night. And then next Saturday, you know, it dips back down again. So it's.
And you remember earlier in the show, we were talking about ice melt. Was that you that was on Facebook that had the blowtorch that was cleaning off their driveway? Was that you?
No, it wasn't me.
I think it was a guy from Virginia or West Virginia, but some guy actually to clean off the snow had a blowtorch.
What's wrong with that idea?
It worked. Of course, you know, you might catch some other things on fire.
Like what? Your boots?
Your plants, boots.
No, you're okay. You know? I'm sure in the driveway you're fine.
Yeah, let's give a guy a blowtorch and say, go at it, buddy. Let's see what happens. Come on. You know what's going to happen. We're still boys.
Maybe that's their snow removal approach up there in West Virginia.
I don't know. I know the old saying, boys will be boys. But, you know, give a guy a blowtorch, what's going to happen? You know, that could be a punchline right there.
I know what happened to the guys that used not a blowtorch, but it was one of those weed killing type of torches.
Uh-huh.
Out there.
They killed a lot of stuff.
They injured a lot of plants around the weeds that they were killing.
There you go.
Yes. You have to be careful.
But we were talking indoor plants.
Yes, we were.
You know, and there's some really, a lot of things that, because we don't carry at the garden center any indoor. We just don't fool with them. But a lot of our tropicals will be indoor plants for people. And you can winter them over fairly easily, but then enjoy them all summer long.
And you get a lot of color this time of year. And that's what we're really trying to hone in on.
The bromeliads.
The bromeliad is
a wonderful plant. Uh-huh.
A very interesting plant, too. And it will bloom for a long, long time. And the bromeliad, it really doesn't like a lot of water either. And
correct.
It's interesting. An approach to water the bromeliad is putting some water in those big, wide, thick kind of crevices where the leaves come out. It captures water, rainwater, and it just sits there.
But it doesn't need as much sun either. That's what's kind of nice. So if you have a house that maybe doesn't get as much direct sun, because, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but I always thought actually this is one of those that would even live in a bathroom, which is dark.
I've had bromeliads before in the past, and I've had one that I've carried out through like four or five various, you know, subsequent generations.
Right.
Because the mother plant, it's a monocarpic type of plant, meaning that it blooms once in its lifetime and it will never bloom again.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do, you rely on the small pups developing at the base of the main parent plant, and you pull those away from the side and you plant those, and they will bloom, you know.
Again. And then the next year you do it again.
The next generation, right. Mm-hmm. But the bromeliad, Bob, is one of my favorites.
The color is beautiful.
One called Silver Vase.
Mm-hmm.
It has that the real wide kind of leaf. They kind of go upward and arch out.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they catch rainwater down where the leaves meet the main stalk of the plant, the stem. And the blooms will last for a long, long, long time. And Silver Vase has a very interesting bloom. As she starts to bloom, it emerges as a little pink nodule, and then it starts to open up, and it goes even beyond that. On top of that pink bloom, you get little purple blooms.
Mm-hmm. Gives you the multicolors.
Very, very, very attractive. And also, its leaves, its foliage is very interesting, too. It almost looks like a real fine, like dusting on it, like a light snow dusting.
Right. The only thing you got to be careful of is temperature.
Yeah, it's a tropical
plant. So it likes to be kind of in a tropical type environment. Is there any other ones of the indoors that you really like?
You know, I like the African violets to a degree.
Yeah.
You know, they're long-lived. People keep those for a long, long time. And often people come into the garden center and say, hey, my grandmother had this 15, 20 years ago. And
do you use a lot of this stuff in some of your arrangements for people that, you know, send flowers for various reasons? Do you use some of this stuff in those at Jackson's?
Very, very often we do. We will make up various types of blooming baskets for funeral visitations.
Sure.
A lot of times people will send those kind of baskets, blooming baskets, to friends, people who move into new homes.
Right, as a gift.
As gifts, people who are just opening up an office facility. A lot of people like these kind of plants in the office environment.
Sure.
And
I'm thinking of a good one for, you know, cleaning the air. I'm gonna see if you what do you think one of the better ones is for like having in the house for air quality?
Well, you're talking about what Bob's mentioning here is there's a great deal of benefits that you get from plants being indoors. And one of those is removing pollutants that are in our indoor environment. And if you think we don't have any pollutants inside, you know, we'll talk more about
that. Let's talk to Arlinghouse again. They'll come in and talk to us about that stuff.
That's right. But to answer your question, one of the best, I have to say, one of the best plants that I know of that I've read about, and I know there's been studies done by NASA that will remove a lot of pollution or particulates in the air indoors is the spider plant.
Mm-hmm. That's where I was going.
Yeah. That is one of the best. I think there were some studies done years ago where the spider plant, believe it or not, and I don't know what the size of the indoor environment or the room was when they did the study, but in a 24-hour period, it removed 85% of the pollutants.
That's pretty amazing.
That's
for an indoor plant.
That's incredible.
And this is another one that's pretty easy to grow because it doesn't take a lot of sun.
No.
It can handle 65 degrees. So this time of year, if you keep your house a little cooler, it'll be okay.
It's okay. And plus, you know, you get a lot of new starts. A lot of pups are born off of that main mother plant, the spider plant. And you just cut those and you can root those and start those and give those to friends. Keep that in mind because we got to take another quick break. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. When we come back, we'll talk about some more benefits of indoor plants and some plants you want to consider to bring indoors to make it a healthier living environment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And co-hosting the show with me this morning is Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And if you're just waking up and you peek outside, there isn't any snow yet. I don't know what's going on north of the city or a little further north, but out the window here from the studio, from what I can tell, it's raining at the moment.
It is.
And
which would be a good day to get inside to go see the Cincinnati Home and Garden Show. I'm sorry, Home and Garden Show. I said that. Travel, Sports, and Boat Show. I'm sorry.
There you go.
Travel, Sports, and Boat Show. It started last night, actually, and it opens again today. I believe it opens at 11:30. You know, if you want to get some discount tickets, I think you can get them at Kroger. Or also, you could just maybe listen into here. You might get some free ones.
You have some free ones, Bob.
I do have some free tickets to give away.
749-B105. What caller do you want, Bob, to win some free tickets to the boat
show? So 749-B105. We'll take the fifth caller. And in order to win the tickets, all you have to do is tell us your favorite plant. Indoor, outdoor, tree, shrub, doesn't matter. You just got to tell us what your favorite one is just so we know.
You
got to do to win it.
And what, two tickets?
Two tickets, and it can be used anytime. You'll be able to even go as early as today. And it's the Cincinnati Travel, Sports, and Boat Show presented by Ram. It's a Hart Productions. I was down there setting up the display with my brother this week. He's still down there. But we helped get all the boats in the doors and kind of run the floor part of it. And it was, the boats are awesome. There are there were some campers down there. I think there was like 10 or 12 of those. There was boats every size you can imagine. There was golf carts. There was ATVs. There was all kinds of stuff.
You know, it's funny you say that, and we'll get back to the benefits of indoor plants in a moment, but I know you're a big boater, and I just want to point this out to you. When we were driving south to Atlanta, I've never seen as many campers on the road being pulled ever that I can remember. Is that a big trend right now?
Oh, camping's huge. Camping is huge. I mean, my mom and dad have a big fifth wheel, you know. One of my really good buddies, Rob French, they go camping all the time. The time, and they just love it. But yeah, I mean, it's a great way. I mean, let's face it, we always talk about the kids being on Xbox and all this other stuff. You know, you want to get out there, you know, get out on the boat, get in and out on the camper, take the kids out and do some things. Go out with the family, go with friends. You know, I wanted so bad for us to go out on the boat. The river just didn't cooperate every time we had a chance. But I mean, there is anything you want down there when it comes to you that know, stuff. Plus the golf show, which is your favorite.
I need to work on my golf game. But you know, I've not been down there in a long time, so you're jazzing me up to take some interest in going down there.
There was some cool boats. Like I said, I was really, I mean, even there was like, it's presented by Ram Truck, and Ram had brought some trucks in, so they're down there, so you can get in and climb in those and see those. They were awesome. I mean, the trucks are just, the technology in those was unbelievable. But not to mention, now this weekend is the golf show and sports show.
Right.
It's only this weekend. So if you want to see that, and if you haven't been there and you love, you need to go look. And then all the travel stuff, it's all in kind of in one section. So if you want to go down, and I noticed I saw some of the pamphlets coming in. They're from everywhere. There's all about the lakes and different places to travel to. It's a great show. Hart Productions puts on. Vicky and Chip just do an amazing job putting on all kinds of stuff for people to see. We actually have a booth down there just selling some signage and some lake and pond and some stuff.
And you know, doesn't our good friend Karen Sackstetter have a setup down there with the boat decking products that she's selling that her sons?
I think so. I think so.
On various
boats. And we do have a winner.
Let it rip.
Amber Wells. Good morning, Amber. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Congratulations. You're our winner.
Thank you. So my favorite plant is the hibiscus. And oh. It's a funny story. She's actually blooming in the garage right now. I think she's a little mixed up.
Oh, yeah.
That 60-degree weather got a few things mixed up.
I think so. And the heater in there, I think that's kind of helping keep her extra warm.
Now, how long have you had her?
She's only a year and a half old.
Okay.
She was new this summer.
What color is she?
She's kind of like a fuchsia pink.
Oh, that's a pretty one.
And I had six of them, but last year in the garage, it wasn't heated real well, and I lost them all. So I'm refueling the collection.
I like
she's
that.
She's the only one that made it.
Good for you. Good for you. You know, if you fall off the bike, you just get right back up and get on it again.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. That's right. That's right. And I figure if I get one more year, hey, that's another $40, $50 save.
Yeah. Absolutely. Not to mention, it's kind of fun to do, isn't it?
It is, and they get bigger and stronger.
So yes.
They do. Is it a tree form or is it a shrub form?
It's a tree form.
Yeah, I love the tree forms. And, yeah, it's not uncommon to see them bloom sometimes mm-hmm. during the winter months. You get a little bit of yellowing of the foliage and so forth. You know, just keep in mind, you back off the watering. You don't want to fertilize and wait it
okay.
out. And then next spring, okay. as you introduce it and take it back outside, give it a little fertilization, and you should be good to go.
How much water do you guys suggest to give her throughout the winter? I've been giving her maybe like 2 water bottlefuls once a month.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Just a little bit, not too much.
Okay.
Let it get a little dry, and then okay. a drink, and a little dry, then a drink, yes.
Okay.
Well, that's great, Amber. Well, we appreciate you calling and listening. If you would, though, stay put. Alex is going to pick up the phone again and get all your information and tell you how to get those tickets. And
awesome.
You'll be able to pick them up later today or whenever you want to go.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Amber. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that's a, you know, this is a great weekend to take in the boat show, sport and boating show.
There was a pontoon down there that was really cool. And even if, you know, you're not into pontoons, you got to go look at Loader Marine. Loader Marine had one down there. It's silver. You can't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty pricey, but man, is it cool. But, I mean, I love working the show because I go down there and see everybody. You know, I get to
right.
see the guys from Hearn Marine. I get to see the guys from Dixie and, you know, and Colerain RV. I mean, there's just so many, and they're good guys. They're local. We talk about being small business people and going into your independent garden centers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what these guys are too, you know. So when you're supporting the community, we're big on supporting our local community. And these guys are, there's a few maybe even stretched out from Lexington and different parts of the tri-state, but they're local guys, you know, and they're good guys. And they want to give you exactly what you want. They have all the information. You know, Ed from Sea Ray of Cincinnati is just a wonderful guy. You know, so I get to work with these guys hand in hand, and we're hauling in 300 plus boats in the matter of like 24 hours. It's not an easy task.
Is Cincinnati a big boating community, just because of the Ohio River and some of the lakes that are close by?
You know, it's funny. There's a big boating community,
mm-hmm.
but it's not all just on the river. You know, Norris Lake is huge. Cumberland is huge. Dale Hollow is huge. Brookville
right.
Lake is huge.
Right.
You know, you go out to Brookville on a Saturday or Sunday on a nice day. Woo, it's busy. I mean, it really is busy. But the river on some years is just wonderful. I mean, there was a couple times this year the river was really clean. It just wasn't very much this year, you know. And then there's a lot of people, a lot of harbors along the river that are just great places to pull into and, you know,
and
get some
out.
Food or, you know, Ludlow Bromley, you and I, we really tried to get there, and
that's
it's a great place to go hang out.
That's a fun local place to hang out. You'll run into a lot of friends down there, that's for sure.
But hang tight, too, also.
We have more tickets.
I actually have quite a bit of tickets. Vicky Hart was kind enough to say, you can do 5 sets. So we got 4 more sets of tickets, and all people are going to have to do is tell us their favorite plant. But they got to listen for the time to call, and we'll
Sounds
tell them.
Sounds good. 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we've been talking about various things all along this morning's program thus far. And we'll get back to talking about some of the benefits of indoor plants. But before doing so, we have Daryl with us. Good morning, Daryl. How are you?
Good morning. I live in the Kenwood area. I have a tree question for you.
Uh-huh.
I have three autumn blaze maples between the street and the sidewalk, and one of those over the last year has developed a split, a vertical split in the bark, kind of starting from the ground upwards, and it seems to be getting taller and wider, and it appears to be exposing the wood underneath the bark.
Right.
And my question is, first of all, kind of what may cause that? Is it disease or insect? And what should I be doing about it?
Well, it's, for the most part, it can be a common thing with some of our maples, and especially the autumn blaze. A couple of things can be the culprit. And before we go any further, I want to ask you, Daryl, what is the caliper? What is the diameter of that tree? I'm just curious.
About six inch.
So it's still relatively young. And this might be one of those situations where this particular split may have been there from a couple of years ago. And then as the tree really started putting on new growth and pushing, you start seeing that split, you know, where it's more prevalent. But a couple of things can happen with maple trees. One, it could be sun scald, typically during the winter months. And Bob, feel free to chime in anytime. Especially during the winter months, as the sun is in the southern part of the sky, a lot of times one side of the bark, the lower bark of our trees, our maples, will heat up a little bit more rapidly than the other side, that where the cell structure on the shady side of the tree will stay in the frozen state. The cell structure on the sunny side, south side of that tree, warms up, and you'll have cell structures where they rupture, and it causes the splitting in the bark. Sometimes if a tree is whipped around at a very young age, see a bad windstorm, for example, can cause splitting in the lower portion of the trunk of the tree where the bark is, as you're explaining. So it could be a number of things that bring that about. Sometimes you'll see that happen if somebody is careless with a lawnmower or a weed eater, you know, cutting around trees, that there isn't a defined bed that's mulched, and are up close to it with power equipment. Sometimes that will be the culprit. At this point in time, I don't do anything heroic. I just allow it to develop and grow and see how it you know, pans out. And if you really have any true concerns, which it sounds like you do, I would suggest you call Ron Rothaus. He has a business here in Cincinnati called the Arbor Doctor. And
okay.
Give him a telephone call and see if he can come over and just take a look at that tree, give you an assessment and maybe some suggestions. But for the most part, we just allow those trees, that those issues to continue on, and hopefully that tree will heal itself over time.
That's, and on maples, it will happen.
It will happen.
A lot more frequently than some other trees.
Okay. I was a little worried about it because it appears that the underwood is just truly exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if that opened it up to, I don't know, infection kind of stuff.
You know, sometimes it can open them up to maybe some insect activity. And that's when people, homeowners, will feel compelled to use some sort of a tar product to cover that. But we don't recommend that anymore like we used to. We want that tree to naturally heal on its own and you know, scar over, so to speak, where it heals itself.
Okay.
And in the spring, when you go out and you're getting out into the garden or out into the landscape a little bit more, if you see a lot of loose bark hanging from it where it split, we do want to try to remove some of the loose bark. It's kind of like if you have a cut on your skin and you got just some skin hanging there, you're going to remove that because it's dead. It's not going to reattach to the skin that is there. So you'll clean that up, and kind of, you might do that with a knife or something to make a clean edge, and that'll actually help that tree heal itself even a little bit faster.
And wait till spring to do that?
Yeah, I wouldn't go out and do anything right now. Wouldn't you, Tony, just kind of sit tight till spring?
Yeah, I just would sit tight. Daryl, do you have an ink pen, piece of paper on hand?
I do.
Write this number down. This is Ron Rothaus's number. It is area code 513-661-6600. 2673.
Okay.
And Ron has helped a few of my friends and some other people who have called here in and around the house. So great guy, a wealth of knowledge, and he'll definitely assess that for you and give you some insight.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys.
You're welcome, Daryl. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for listening, buddy.
Okay. You too. Bye.
Yep. And you know what? You know what? That's a good question, because that happens a lot. I actually see that on maples pretty frequently. But they're usually fine.
Yeah, more than likely, that's a pretty common occurrence for most maple trees. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of times, too, when trees are young, a lot of times, you know, they'll go through those growth periods where they just have a burst in a, you know,
yes,
growth rate.
And you get expansion.
And all of a sudden, you get that expansion. The inner part of the tree is mm-hmm. outgrowing the bark, mm-hmm. the outer part. And sometimes that's the culprit. But
you know, and removing that skin, a funny story. When I was about 7 years old, I remember my grandpa, he had somebody, one of his visitors had backed into a tree at his house, because mm-hmm. he kind of lived in the woods, and he took a gravel path back to his house. It was really kind of a neat house, the way it all set in the woods. Somebody smashed a tree, and it was a maple, and crushed the bark. And he's like, come here, Bobby, I want to show you something. So, you know, here I am 7 years old walking out with Grandpa, and he took his pocket knife right out of his pants, and he started cleaning up the bark. And he was explaining to me, because I want you to watch this over the years, how the tree starts kind of healing itself over.
Right.
And, you know, that's where I learned that. I was literally about seven, and until he moved when I was 30 years old, you could see where the tree was hit, but it had healed itself over really nice and smooth. You could see the damage, but the tree was fine.
Yeah, and sometimes removing the bark, too, you're removing areas where insects can hide and nest.
Right.
You're also removing areas that might hold water.
And it was all the loose bark. I want to make sure it was loose bark, not good stuff.
Right. And you're removing areas that might hold water.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, when the water freezes and forms and turns into ice, yep. it expands it even more. So great tip.
That way there was no rotting. Now, that wasn't in, you know, what we would call like a crotched area where there was two branches coming together. This was on the trunk mm-hmm. where it was vertical, but it did seem to make a difference. But, you know...
Yeah, I know. Back in 2000, in 2008, when Ike, the hurricane, swept through here, damaged a lot of trees, and you didn't see that damage until like really 2 to 3 years later.
You can see it now, even if you look back, because the trees where they twisted a little bit,
how you can actually grown, you can almost
You can almost see on a few of the trees. You can actually see it. So, but you know, I know we got to take a quick break, but before we do, if this is going to be your cue to call at 749-B105 to win the second batch of tickets to the Cincinnati Travel, Sports, and Boat Show presented by Ram. And we're going to take the fastest finger, so caller number one.
Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And give us a shout if anything you want to talk about in and around the house or the landscape, 749-B105. And if you're just waking up, welcome. If you're looking outside, I don't see any of the white stuff yet. And hopefully it just stays H2O. It's just water. But I don't think that's going to be the case, Bob. I think we're going to probably end up seeing a little bit of the white stuff. And those north of us, we're going to see a lot more than those on the south side of the river.
They will. And a good day to go to the boat show.
I'm okay with that. And a great day to go to the
boat
show, that's for sure.
Congratulations to Michelle. She was the caller number one. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, congratulations on having a quick finger to dial that phone.
Well, thank you. It's my iPhone. I'm driving, and my brother and his wife are third-generation boaters at Lake Cumberland.
Oh, very good. They can't go wrong with that.
Exciting, yeah. I don't own the boat, but I somehow get invited on the boats, and that's the best way to go boating.
I was going to say, there's a lot of people that will argue the best way to boat is on somebody else's, so you got that right. You got that down.
And hang on, Michelle. What was Alex's B-O-A-T saying, boat? What does that mean?
So what people say is boat stands for bust out another thousand.
Bust out another thousand. So, well, Michelle doesn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
All right, Michelle, but in order to win the tickets officially, you have to tell us your favorite plant.
Oh my gosh, there's so many. It's hard to narrow it down.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my favorite plants in the spring is a tulip, and it's called Angelique. It's a beautiful triple blooming. It comes out like an icy white pink and has a little bit of pale yellow in the middle. It's just absolutely fragrant. It's a long bloomer. It's delicious. If you have, if you can purchase them at Jackson Florence. It's one of their, probably, I'm sure, one of their top sellers. I buy them. It just keeps on giving year after year.
Yeah, it is a beautiful plant. It's kind of got that little white with that blush to it, doesn't it? Kind of that pinkish color. It's just an absolutely beautiful, beautiful plant. So, yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with that. And, you know, it's kind of nice to have some that color first thing in the spring, too. So that's a beautiful, beautiful plant.
Obviously, you do not have any deer issues if you're growing tulips.
She's laughing. Did you hear that? She's laughing.
They're like a steak sandwich.
They are. Well, Michelle, thank you for listening. Thanks for calling in. Enjoy those tickets. And, you know, keep in touch because we love to hear from our listeners.
Have a good weekend, Michelle. Bye.
Thank you. Good to see you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I like that laugh.
Yeah, did you hear her? She said that. She just started giggling. I was like, that's funny. That is really funny. But that is a beautiful tulip. I mean, that is a beautiful tulip plant.
That it is. I really like tulips. But the thing of it is, they're not as reliable sometimes as today as they used to be.
You know, why do you think that is?
I think over the years, we've hybridized so many different varieties to come up with different colors and various growing heights and so forth. Yeah. I think that we've sacrificed some of the integrity with some of the tulips. Some of the older varieties, they still come up in bloom for us every year around the garden center. Mm-hmm. They've been in for about 15 years, believe it or not.
Right.
Some of the newer varieties, it's changed considerably. And that's one of the downsides of... planting tulip bulbs, and I don't want to sound like, Debbie Downer by any means, but...
Go ahead and do it. I mean, they're not expensive.
No, they're not expensive. Mm-mm. I still love tulips. And usually you'll get a really good solid 3 years out of tulips, and you'll start seeing them wane off a little bit. And then sometimes you really have to contend or compete with a deer. You know, they might get to them before you really get to enjoy the beauty.
Right. Well, the one she was talking about specifically, the Angelique, it's a triple. It doesn't look like a tulip when you look at the picture.
But I think I know Michelle, and Michelle is a very savvy gardener.
Yeah, she must be, because that one. I personally have never planted it, but I did know of it because of the color. Because I remember reading about tulips and going through some of the information, and that was one that I thought was really neat. And I always wanted to try to force it for one of our shows, but nobody would do it. Love, that's a beautiful, beautiful tulip.
For those who planted some tulips or daffodils or hyacinths this past fall, we're not far away from reaping the benefit. As soon as we start to warm up this early spring, you're going to see that burst of color. And when you plant those tulips or those daffodils and various, fall bulbs in a grouping or in a drift, so to speak, they are stunning. You just get an impact of color right now.
I want to get your take on something. I had a customer in, asked if I had any bulbs left yesterday. So what would you tell them if they came into Jackson?
Ooh,
I know, I put you on the spot. You weren't expecting it.
No. Hopefully I would be sold out.
Yeah.
I would say, unfortunately, it's not the best time to plant bulbs. Depending, if it was a mild winter and the ground was workable, I would certainly give it a shot. And especially if the bulbs weren't too soft or brittle, if you were to squeeze them and they would kind of like just crumble.
Exactly.
I still think that you may not have that bloom as early as you would if you had planted it in the fall.
Correct.
Because that's when it's still that root development is developing and growing.
Especially with the heat that we had in early January.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I would probably, that would be my response. You might get a later bloom. You may not get one at all. It just depends.
Mm-hmm.
They need that vernalization period. They need that, that cooling period, 16 weeks of cold. So that might have an impact on it as well. So that would be my response.
Yeah, we didn't have any, so,
Well,
she couldn't do it.
Well, we can help you with that. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. Got to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to give away some more tickets.
Sure, why not?
The Holman Sport or the Sporting and Boat Show.
Mm-hmm.
I see you make me.
I did. I messed you up, didn't I?
To the Sport and Boat Show.
Cincinnati Travel Sports and Boat Show presented by Ram. But yes, we will give tickets away. How about caller number 4? So caller number 4, you'll get those tickets. All you got to do is tell us what your favorite plant is. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. Co-hosting the show alongside me this morning is my good friend from Bard's Nursery, Bob Bard. And Bob, who's our latest winner? It was caller number four.
It was caller number four, and it was Matt Grace. Good morning, Matt. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How about you?
Good, good. Congratulations on your tickets.
Matt, do you have a boat or a camper or a big sportsman kind of guy, golfer? I know they have the golf show down there, too.
They do?
Yeah, I do have a boat.
What kind of boat? Bass boat?
Ski boat.
Oh, he's got a nice one. What color do you, what color is it?
Black and orange.
Oh, yeah. Malibu's got some really awesome boats down there. I think that's No Wake has Malibu, don't they?
Yes,
No Wake. Ryan from No Wake is a great, great man. They work hard putting their display together. They have got some awesome ski boats down there.
Hey, is it tricked out with like the speaker system and everything? Can you really hear that when you're behind the boat skiing?
Yeah, all the way 80 feet back.
All right, are you any good at wakeboarding?
I'm okay.
No. All right, I can get up on a wakeboard, and I can go in and out of the wake, but there is no tricks. Only one time did I actually reverse or spin—I don't know what you call it—where you're facing one way and all of a sudden you face the other way. But it was by pure accident that I did it. I'd like to tell you I did it because I had some style, but I didn't. I can water ski, but I'm not real good on the wakeboard.
Yeah, it's fun.
All right, so what's your favorite plant, Matt?
I think it's got to be hydrangeas.
Oh, you're right up our alley.
Different colors.
Yeah, I like the hydrangea. I'm lured to the hydrangea, especially some of the sun-loving varieties, and I like the fact that breeders are coming out with new varieties all the time. Probably more than we can count now, but there are some great varieties of hydrangeas.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, we appreciate you listening. Congratulations. I hope you enjoy your tickets, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Have a great day.
You too. Hydrangeas. We love this show, and you and I love hydrangeas.
I do. I get excited when the new varieties come out, and a lot of my peers are like, another hydrangea. Well, hey, you never know. And then sometimes we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, where are they now?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, those hydrangeas or various plants that are stellar performers, you don't see them as readily available as you used to.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how sometimes that works. But, the hydrangeas, I agree with Matt. You can't go wrong. There's so many good ones. So.
Not at all. And also, I want to point out, we have a couple of phone interviews we're going to do this morning here around the 8 o'clock hour.
Yes.
One of those is with Michelle Stanton, and she is the horticultural agent out there at the Kenton County Extension office, and she's just going to give us a little bit of insight as to some of the upcoming classes at the Kenton County Extension office, and you certainly want to listen in on that. And also, my good friend, and he's done some roofing work for me in the past, a great job, is Tim Mallory from Advantage Roofing, and I think we're going to talk a little bit about ice dams. We don't think about that until it actually happens.
That's too late.
But, hey, we're in the winter months, and you might want to definitely listen in on that discussion.
Yes.
And, again, that's Tim Mallory from Advantage Roofing. Great company. And, Bob, if you ever need a roof, there you are, because they did mine back in 2008.
Yeah.
And that's when we were talking earlier in the program, when Hurricane Ike
came through.
Swept through the Cincinnati area. I was out of town, but before we went out of town and that happened, Advantage Roofing had put a new shingle roof on my house. When I came back into Cincinnati, flying in, all these blue tarps were on all these rooftops.
But not yours, huh?
And not mine.
And it's been good. Said 2008?
Yes.
And so it's 11 years old already?
Can
you believe
that?
It's 19, 11 years old. How about that quick math for a Kentucky
kid? And I know that I would have Advantage Roofing put another roof on my house.
So the whole service with Advantage Roof was just great, top to bottom?
Clean. You really couldn't even tell that anybody was even there.
And you had a lot of plants around your house even back then.
That's my major concern right there. A lot of guys, I hear it all the time, people come into the garden center, hey, ABC or XYZ company put a new roof on my house, they ruined my tree and a couple shrubs. I hear it all the time.
ABC? ABC's already been chewed. That's gum.
Already been chewed.
Yes. That's gum. That's not a roof.
Bob, I told you to get out of that comedy world.
Boo. It's bad.
Boo.
But we got some good calls. There's some really good information and good classes at the extensions office.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they got They have stuff all, every month. Even in the winter, you think, oh, what could they really talk
about?
You
know, really take it upon yourself to go onto their website, you know, the Kenton County website, the Campbell County website for the extension services in Boone County as well. There's a myriad of classes just taking place all the time. And our good friend from Boone County, David Kester, hopefully we can get him in here and talk more about fruit trees and so forth during the month of February.
Yep.
That's when we start thinking about pruning fruit trees and just a lot of great topics coming up. And
these classes are cheap. I mean, they do got to put a little fee into it because they put some stuff into it and, you know, they're going to be $5, $6.
Sometimes
they're free.
Most of them are free.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great service that we have.
But they are limited to how many people.
Yeah. Now, you know, I have to ask you this. You know, your facility is over here in the state of Ohio. Who's your point of contact when it comes to using extension?
Kenton County Extension's office.
So although that you're physically located in Ohio as a business.
Yeah, because we're in Kenton County. Or I'm sorry. I said Kenton.
Yeah, you did say, right.
Claremont County Extension's office. They're out there at the fairgrounds. Out there in Owensville. So they really are very helpful.
So you work pretty close hand-in-hand with those guys?
I don't work close hand-in-hand. Mm-hmm. I haven't need them for a lot, but I send customers up there because I let them help with some of their soil analysis to help them get them sent off to Ohio State University.
Right.
So I'll send people to them. Not that I don't want to work with them. I just haven't had the need very much, you know, in the past probably 5 to 10 years.
Now, is there still a physical office or any type of contact for Hamilton County?
I don't think there is anymore. It used to be at the Civic Garden Club or right by that.
Right.
And I believe, unfortunately, with some fundings, and if anybody knows different, we'd love to hear if it's changed. But last I had heard, Hamilton County Extension's office wasn't there anymore. You know, but I may be wrong. Please don't. By no means do I know for sure. That's just what
Bob, I never known you to be wrong.
Yeah, well, just about
just
every other segment.
But no, I was just curious. You know, I know that I'm on the south side of the river, and boy, I tell you what, the extension services over there, they're impeccable. And
yes.
We're very fortunate to have the Kenton County, the Campbell County, and Boone County extensions. So, and use your extensions too. A lot of free services that are available to the public, and we pay for that. You know, when we pay for our taxes and so forth over in Northern Kentucky, we're paying for that. So most certainly use it.
I agree. It's a wealth of knowledge. There's just, you know, different information that you can get. You know, and then they also can help you get to like over in Ohio, they'll send some of those analysis up to Ohio State University.
While we're talking about it, let's just during the break here, we got to take another quick break. We'll just give Michelle Stanton a call and see what she has to say with what's going on over Kenton County. 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And as we said before we went into the break, we were going to reach out to my good friend from the Kenton County Extension Office, Michelle Stanton. And Michelle, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. I am fine. How are you?
We're doing well. So, what do you have in store for today? I'm just curious. Have you done all your grocery shopping and everything with Winter Storm Harper coming into the tri-state area?
No, I've got to run out to the store and get stuff for tomorrow's dinner.
There you go.
There you go.
Tomorrow's dinner. What are you cooking?
Yeah, what are you cooking?
Oh, let's see. Some teriyaki chicken, some stir-fried vegetables. I've got a cool dessert up my sleeve, having a few friends over for dinner.
Nice.
That's nice. We're friends too.
Yeah, come on over.
We'll be over. I like Chinese.
Well, she's right in the neck. Like her office is right, you know, like 8 minutes from my house. You know, because I live in it right there in Independence, so I drive past the extension's office pretty frequently.
Bob drives by your office all the time, and he's yet to stop in and introduce
himself. I'm gonna do better.
Oh my gosh, you have to do that.
I will stop by. I'll get out there sometime here the end of January, early February. I'll make it happen.
All right, I'll call you and set up a date.
That would be great.
So, Michelle, give us a little bit of, give us a lowdown. What's going on at the extension office out there in Kenton County?
So this Tuesday night from 6 to 7:30, we're having a class on managing wildlife, especially in home landscapes, because people love the animals, but they're also maddening because as much as they want to attract them, they get into the gardens, they eat your favorite flowers, and do some damage. So we will talk about how to handle that. What can you do to make your yard less attractive? What can you do to understand their habitat so that you can work with them and not against them, perhaps?
That's a big problem for a lot of people, you know, especially deer, especially with the deer and so forth. It's, you know, people get frustrated. They throw the white towel up and just, they're like, I'm finished.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, I need you to come into the garden center more often. Don't quit gardening because the deer are a nuisance,
No, there are things you can do.
That's right.
Rhonda Ritzy with Kenton County Parks and Recreation will be helping. She'll be at the class teaching part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so will Dan Allen, who is our agriculture agent. So the three of us will be giving people the lowdown.
There you go.
That one will be a good class.
And
yeah, it should be fun.
What about some other classes? Anything else on the horizon?
Actually, we've got one coming up that I'm kind of excited about. You know, people love succulents,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the succulents you get are not hardy in our area. So instead, we're doing a class on succulents specifically for those that want to put them in their yards.
That'd be good. When's that class?
So that is Tuesday, January 29th. It's from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. And that is also at our office on Marshall Road. That most of our classes are free. That one is $5, but you go home with some succulents that you can grow totally carefree out here.
And what are some of those succulents that you're speaking of that you're going to be giving away or for the class registration?
We have several varieties of hens and chicks.
Mm-hmm.
We have some sedums. We have a variety of things so that people can choose from them. But then we'll also be talking about some of the more unusual varieties that people may find, and especially people can find them like at your nursery, some of the other nurseries in the area, and then sometimes at the specialty places online.
Right. No, that sounds like a great class. And, you know, succulents are the craze, that's for sure. And they don't require a lot of maintenance.
Colors.
Yes, a lot of great color there. Well, you know, give us your contact information, Michelle, and how people can get online or call the extension office, perhaps register. Can they register online?
They sure can. So you can register online at our office. Google Kenton County Extension. Our website has a link for register for classes. You click on that, and then it's pretty easy to sign up. Our phone number is 859-356-3155. And may I add a plug for one or two other things?
Oh, absolutely.
So first of all, just so your listeners know, Hamilton County does have an extension office. It's on Dane Avenue. And they are there open for business.
Is that part of the OSU Extensions, part of Ohio State University?
Right. And it's on Dane Avenue, which is, I think, sort of north side. Mm-hmm. And Joe Boggs and Julie Crook and some of the other good people there would be happy to help out Hamilton County residents.
Well, absolutely. Thanks for the insight. Thanks for the tip and the information there. Yeah, I was just never clear on that. So that there's some clarification there. I was just talking to Bob in a break about that.
And you can find them online, because I just pulled it up really quick.
Correct.
So you can find it online. It is Dane Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, and it's got their phone number. Office hours are Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5. So that's awesome. That's great.
So one more thing I'd love your listeners to hear about. The Ohio Extension, along with Purdue in Indiana and, of course, Northern Kentucky, UK, we are putting on what's called the Tri-State Green Industry Conference. This is an all-day amazing conference with dozens of wonderful speakers. It's Thursday, February 7th at the Sharonville Convention Center. And you can access that through Ohio State's Extension Office website, or you can Google it and it'll come up as well. But this is for anyone who loves plants, landscaping, people who work in the landscape and nursery trades. There are recertification credits for pesticide licenses for ISA-certified arborists, and it's an amazing, great day, and we do this every year.
Awesome. Well, thanks for all the information, Michelle, and I'll hook up with you and Bob. Bob and I will get with you and see if we can kind of make this maybe a monthly segment to, hey, what's going on at the Extension Office? I think people, just knowing what's happening around their Extension services and so forth is good information to have.
Yeah, well, so, I would be delighted to help.
That sounds great. All right, Michelle, have a great weekend, and don't forget to invite us over the next time you're having guests for dinner.
I sure will, and you all stay safe.
You too.
Same. Bye, Michelle. Thank you.
Bye.
You know, it's great having Michelle on just to talk about. One, now we've got the clarification about Hamilton County Extension's office. Because Joe Boggs is, you need to know something about bugs. Call Joe. I think Joe Buggy Boggs is what he goes by.
Have you ever been on any of Joe's walkabouts?
I have not been on a walkabout, but I've been in some of his recertification classes for pesticides that I have to do. And his one, he's fun to be with. He's funny. He's got, you know, good stories. He makes it interesting. And I've talked to him several times. Probably doesn't have any idea who I am because, you know, we just talked about some different things, but he is a wealth of knowledge. So,
oh yeah, no, I've been on some of the walkabouts with Joe and the, you know, his gang and so forth. And when it comes to insects, he's like a kid in a candy store.
He definitely loves that stuff.
And actually, you know, that's where a lot of my interests lie, is just with insects and so forth. I find that a very interesting world, to say the least. The other day when you were over,
I know I was. You pulled out your, you know, all your tools.
I have a microscope that my wife bought me for Christmas a couple of years ago. And
you are like a kid at Christmas time.
And, you know, when you see insects in their world under a microscope, it's very, very interesting.
Look, if they could see you even in the studio now, man, you're like, you're getting all excited, and you could just see it.
Well, I would have traded my IT degree in for an entomology degree. How's that?
You know what?
No, I wouldn't trade it. I liked IT.
You wouldn't. But if you could do it again, I bet you would change it.
I would. I definitely would. We have to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to try and get in touch with our good friend Tim Mallory from Advantage Roofing, because there's some things you might want to know about ice damming buildup. It's the winter months. It doesn't happen often, but, you know, you might save yourself a lot of headaches. We'll be right back, 749-B105. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And if you're just joining us, welcome. A little bit of rain outside at the moment. We're not really sure what kind of
a lot of rain
snowfall amounts we're supposed to receive. The numbers are kind of all over the board. I know north of here, we'll have a little bit more snow than those who are on the south side of the river. For me, I'll take the rain, but actually the snow would be welcoming, especially when we get to the single digits as lows at night in the upcoming week. Snow does act as an insulator, so it's kind of very important for our plants and our plant survival in a lot of ways. And before we went into the break, we said we're going to reach out to our good friend Tim Mallory, the owner of Advantage Roofing, and you can check out their website by going to www.goroof1.com. And good morning, Tim. How are you?
Hey, Tony. I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, good, good. So during the winter months in the roofing business or that industry, how busy is it for you guys? I guess it really depends a lot on the weather, or are you still doing a little bit of work?
Yeah, good question. So we do what I call sporadic work. So we definitely work through the winter, but we have a couple criteria. If the temperature is not going to be above freezing during the day, we don't like to roof. We do a lot of repair work. But we're just picky about what days we work, because when it gets really cold, shingles get brittle, and when you nail them on, they can cause cracks, which down the road can cause you some problems.
Right, right. So for a lot of homeowners, you know, although you may not be that active from a roofing standpoint, especially you guys putting roofs on and all that other good stuff, there's a lot really going on with the roof during the winter months, is there not?
There is. So a couple things. Number one, the winter months are really hard on shingles. So the way shingles are made, there is a seal that seals one shingle to another.
Mm-hmm.
And as a shingle gets older, it's very susceptible to the winter cold. Contractions can break that seal. And then if you get a little bit of wind, it can cause shingles to lift and whatnot. So the winter months are actually harder on a roof than the summer and spring.
Is there a lot of movement underneath the shingle with the wood of the home and so forth, you know, from the contraction of the temperatures?
Yeah, so different materials kind of expand and contract at different temperatures. So the brick's going to expand and contract on your chimney at a different temperature. The shingles are going to expand and contract, and the wood itself is. So it kind of creates a little bit of a pinching or moving of everything in there. So
right.
It can be a little bit tough on the shingles.
Yeah, I know at night when I'm sleeping, you know, I might be awakened by like a snap or a pop, you know, especially when the temperatures get down to the low single digits.
Yeah.
And maybe my deck's moving a little bit, but sometimes it's a little loud, and it's amazing how much movement that you do get, in fact, during the winter months. But, you know, something else, it's a huge concern, it should be for most homeowners. This time of year, we don't think about it until actually the problem occurs, is what they call ice damming, or backing up with ice on the outer edges of the the gutters and the eaves. Explain that, what that actually is, would you please?
Yeah, so it's something that really occurs a lot farther north, but there is problems with it in the Cincinnati area once every 5 or 6, 7 years or so. And basically what it is, you get a blanket of snow on the roof, and the snow acts as an insulator, but the heat rises up through your attic space out of your home, and it starts to melt that bottom layer of snow. And then when the snow gets down to the overhangs, all of a sudden there's no heat source coming up from underneath to melt it, so it freezes at the gutter line. And this just continues to freeze and freeze and makes what's called an ice dam. And it's no different than a dam when you're trying to make a lake. There's water, you build a dam, and then water pools in a reservoir behind it. Well, it's the same thing with roofing. So you got this ice dam along the gutter line, then the water is melting down the roof still trying to get to the gutter, but it hits this dam, and it can be 4 or 5 inches high. And so a water reservoir builds up behind this ice dam, and shingles, most people don't know, are a watershed, not watertight. So water can push underneath those shingles and spill into the attic space and then get into the house and cause a lot of ceiling damage and insulation damage.
Do you see this occasionally in our area? Like you said just a moment ago, primarily north of here, but I guess you get some of those winters where it's severe enough that can very easily happen.
Yeah, we saw it a pretty good bout of it 3 or 4 years ago, and it was a case where we got snow, and then it warmed up to about 33 degrees, and it started thawing out, and then we got snow again, and it got real cold, and then ice started building up, and then all of a sudden we got a 55-degree sunny day. All the snow melted on the roof within a couple hours and wanted to rush to the gutter, but this big ice dam was at the gutter, and it couldn't get to the gutter and caused a lot of damage.
Wow. Now, being in your industry, when you do a roof installation, do you do certain things to take this into consideration, you know, for the homeowner that this could possibly be a problem? Well, I guess we're fortunate it's not as much of a problem as it could be for other people, especially further north. But do you do anything specifically at Advantage Roofing to help with that problem?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. So to take a couple steps back first, the main issue with it is that the heat is coming up through your into your attic space quicker than it should be, or it's not venting out properly. So most people think that it's a roof problem, but it's actually usually either a ventilation problem or it's an insulation problem.
Oh, okay.
If they don't have enough insulation in that attic, you can't control or keep that heat in your house. It's all pouring into the attic space and melting that snow. So the best case scenario is to have proper insulation, R49 or R60. So, you know, 16 to 18 inches of insulation in there, and a ventilation at your eaves and at the ridge of the house to get that hot air quickly out of that attic space so that the snow doesn't melt from the underneath. It melts naturally from the top.
Got it.
So that's the best case scenario to do it. And if you drive down and see houses with icicles, if you look at the garage, not a heated space, a lot of times that garage doesn't have icicles at all because there's no heat coming up through that attic to melt the snow.
Oh, got it. So more so on the house itself versus the garage.
That's correct. So insulation is usually key for solving some of that. But
there is a
product that we put in. It's called an ice and water shield. And it's 3 foot wide, and it goes from the gutter all the way to past the exterior walls into the heated space of your attic. So it's 3 foot wide, but sometimes we have to put two rolls on it to come up 6 foot to make sure we get into that heated space. And basically what it is kind of like a rubberized sheet, and it goes down under the shingles. And if this ice dam occurs and water pushes under that shingle, it hits this rubberized sheet and can't make its way into the house. It runs the water back down to the gutter. And then when the ice dam finally melts, it drains it all out. But this rubber sheet prevents water from getting into your house.
Got it. And no risk of damage to the interior walls and so forth. That makes sense. You know, yeah. Now, on the ice damming, Tim, I've read things before in the past where people will use what they call heating cables, the calcium chloride ice melt. I mean, who's going to get up on their house if it's a two-story house and do that kind of stuff anyway? And two, yeah. Is it corrosive to the shingles? Does it reduce the lifespan of the shingle? Ice dam socks I've heard of. Are those really worthwhile?
Yeah, so in the heat of the moment, what we recommend is to put some calcium chloride into a nylon stocking and lay it across the ice dam, and it'll melt a channel into that ice dam and allow the water reservoir to drain out, just like if you would be taking a bulldozer and running through a dam of a big lake.
Mm-hmm.
It'll melt that reservoir and let that out. So that's kind of a temporary thing to do. You got to be careful, though, with damaging your shingles, and also you got to be careful with damaging your shrubbery, because you don't want that calcium chloride pouring down, so you'll want to put a tarp or something over your shrubs. So temporarily, that's the way to go. Don't get up there with an axe or a hammer and start busting up the ice. We've seen people gouge major holes into roofs and gutters because they're trying to break that ice up. So heat tape works. It's not too sightly, and, you know, you've always got water and electric there mixing, so it's not always a great thing.
Right, right.
The real thing is to make sure your insulation is proper depth. Make sure you have ventilation, which, you know, as a roofing guy can come out and do that. But the preventative thing is when we replace the roof, and when you're thinking of replacing the roof, make sure this good quality ice and water shield goes down along the gutter.
Got it.
And any penetration, actually, we put
awesome. In also. That's a great tip. And you're going to be joining us sometime next month. I think it's the 9th of February. So we're looking forward to having you in. And a great tip on ice damming and some of that information, especially with the making sure your home's properly insulated. How about giving your contact information?
Sure. Yeah. So you can reach us at the office at 513-467-6631, or just get on the website and go to goroof1.com. It's www.goroof1.com, and you can contact us through either source there.
Perfect. There you have it. Tim Mallory, owner of Advantage Roofing. Tim, always a pleasure. I know that I think highly of your work. You did a great job for me personally with my home. And we'll see you on the 9th. How's that?
Okay. Sounds great.
All right. Have a good weekend. Thanks, Tim. Bye.
Man, what a lot of good information there.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you out there, partner, on that. But
No. I was just sitting listening. You know, but what I really enjoyed about Tim, did you hear? He cares. Take care of your plants. You can tell somebody who is a good person to work with and who's not sometimes by just listening.
Well, you know what?
And I was just listening because that's all I did. You didn't hear my voice during the whole interview. I just sat tight. I was listening. I would hire that company.
Well, I didn't know Tim when I hired him. I just saw the work that he was doing in the neighborhood,
yep.
And I was impressed.
There you go.
They were clean. They were in. They were out. And my neighbors, they were very satisfied with this work. And for a long time, when we were looking for somebody for in and around the house to from the roofing industry to be a part of the show, I wanted Tim to be a part of the show. Because back in 2008, when he did our roof, it was, you know, I was very satisfied.
Yeah, and that's so, what you want. I mean, you know, that's anybody wants to recommend somebody.
He is there on the site. He will get up on your roof and look at it. Right. And they also have that after your one-year anniversary of a new roof being installed, he comes back and reinspects it.
That's
you can't get any better than
you
that.
You can't beat that, but you want to recommend somebody who you know is going to do a good job.
You got it. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. And when Bob and I come back, we want to talk about something that I think you and Darlene picked up on. I caught part of it.
We started at the very end.
And a lot of times we're asked this question in the garden center, what are good plants for privacy? And we all value our privacy at home. And we'll tell you more about that when we come back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works, and co-hosting alongside me with me today is my friend Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And always a pleasure to have you in, Bob, and that was a great interview.
Goes too fast. Know,
it does. It
flies by. We're 2.5 hours in.
And
you know what we got to do?
Yes, fire away.
We do. We got to give away some 2 more tickets to the Cincinnati Travel Sports and Boat Show presented by Ram. We're going to take caller number 3, and all you have to do to win the tickets is give us your favorite flower or plant or shrub or tree. That's it. You win the ticket.
That's simple. You know,
it's easy.
Definitely. So before we went into the break, I had mentioned that you and Darlene last week, and thank you, Darlene Cooper, for filling in for me. You started to talk about, you know, screening types of plants that would be effective for screening or adding some element of privacy. And I thought that was a great topic because it's more than often, more than you think, when customers come into the garden center, they're looking to do just that. And also on our Facebook page, the photograph that I posted gives you a really great representation of privacy or screening that you can do with everybody, for the most part, their go-to. What I planted this past fall is the Arborvita called Green Giant.
Yep.
A great plant. Check that out on our Facebook page. But that's the kind of privacy that you can get with various different types of evergreens or whatever shrub it is that you want to choose to use. Or it could be a tree as well, or it could be some ornamental grasses.
Well, sure. It all depends on the application.
That's right.
Are we needing big screening? Like, you know, say we're sitting out here and we're at the studio where we are now, and we want to maybe block a little bit of 71. We can't see it because there's foliage there, or there's trees there, deciduous. But let's say there wasn't. We want it all blocked from the highway. You know, we might bring in a Norway spruce or something really big if we need that. You know, the Arborvita I like because they're not as wide. So if you're putting those, the ones like we put in your yard, they're not going to be as big as the Norway spruce. So you can put them in an area that's a little bit more confined, and you're not going to have to worry about them completely overgrowing the area. So I love the Green Giant Arborvita for that.
I do too, and it's a great one. And
grows
fast. It will put on up to 2 to 3 feet a year.
And the key is the disease resistance, because a lot of Arborvitas aren't.
No,
most Arborvitas are not deer resistant.
Now, explain something here too. It's a Western Arborvita, a little bit different than some of the others, and its growth habit is a little different than Emerald Green. So Emerald Green's a very nice arborvita in the right situation, but with the Westerns, they have a leader.
Yes, a single leader, typically.
A single leader. So therefore, you know, if you get an excessive snowfall or a snow weight, it's not as drastic as it could be on one of the other varieties.
Right. This is one of those plants that's really funny, though. When you first buy them and they're small, you just can't visualize how big they're going to get and the privacy that they're going to get you. But if you just sit tight for 2 or 3 years, because it grows so fast, they really, really do a good job.
What about, you know, you mentioned the Norway spruce. You know, there is a columnar variety of the Norway spruce. And do we have a winner yet?
We do have a winner.
Far away.
And I believe Barry, is it Barry?
Barry.
Okay, good. Congratulations. You're our winner. Yep. So, do you have a boat?
No, I don't.
Do you have a camper or anything, or you just like to kind of be and enjoy the outdoors?
I just like to enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah, that's a good show to go do that. So, because even if you don't boat or camp, you can go see some of the travel stuff or some of the sports stuff. So there's something for everybody down there.
Yeah.
So, what's your favorite flower or shrub?
Probably the rose bush.
Oh, you can't go wrong. Now, are you into the new ones, like all the knockout roses, or do you like the traditional ones?
The traditional.
Oh, yeah, that goes up Tony's alley. Tony likes a lot of those traditional ones.
Yeah, I like them myself.
Any particular color?
I like them. The red ones.
The red ones? All right, well, I don't think you can go wrong with that. Some people who maybe aren't avid gardeners may disagree that the rose bush is, you know, they might say it's a little too difficult to grow, but I agree with you. I don't think you can go wrong with a good rose bush.
No, I don't either.
So, but hang on just a second. I'm going to put you back with Alex so we can get all your information to make sure that you can get those tickets, and he'll explain on how to pick them up. So you can get in there as early as today at 11:30.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for listening.
All
And you have another pair of tickets we'll give away just a little bit later.
Not yet, though. Hold tight.
Before we conclude the
show, I have our final set of tickets to give away. And I haven't decided what number yet.
Well, when we get there, we'll decide.
But let's go back to that shake. Because, you know, we started, you were out. But Darlene and I, you know, we kind of got going on Sun perennials and some things. And we kind of got a little worked up because we're both plant nerds. But we tried to get in the privacy. We just didn't have enough time. So, you know, Green Giant Arborvitae was the one she had mentioned as well.
You know, and you mentioned a Norway spruce. And now the one that came to mind was the Kalmaner variety, the upright.
Yep.
And which is a fast grower, by the way, and it gets around 20 foot in height.
It'll probably be taller than that.
And, you know, not everything grows at that height. These are just averages now. Mm-hmm. These are just averages, Bobby.
I will tell you that I have seen Columnar arborvitae 35 foot tall.
Very, very likely. If it's in its ideal location and situation, most definitely. But with about a 6 foot width or a little wider, or a little less?
I've seen it up to 10.
Yeah. But an elegant specimen, that's for sure.
I think that's a really cool plant. And you don't get the needle cast disease like you do on some of the blue spruces. You're going to get a hardier tree from the Norway spruce.
Right.
Now, I even love the Norway spruce, but, you know, going back to trees, we sometimes plant trees, I think they can get a little big in areas maybe they shouldn't go. And sometimes, like our oaks, and I'd mentioned on the show last week, you know, there was an oak tree at Amanda from Amanda and Jesse. I went and saw her the other day. And this oak tree was so big that it overhung Amanda's house, the house that it belonged to, the house next to it. It was huge. Mm-hmm. You know, and I love the tree, don't get me wrong, but this is sometimes, especially with privacy, you need to really plan what area are you trying to block, how much space do you need. Because a lot of times a Norway spruce will do the job instantly, but maybe it's too big for if you have a little backyard. You know, so I think really knowing what you're trying to block, privacy is important. I live on a corner lot. I live on the corner. When I put in my swimming pool, I had people coming up to me, hey, where are we swimming? And I didn't even know them. I mean, so I kind of felt like I needed to get some privacy.
Right.
So, but I was cautious about which trees I was putting in where, because I just didn't want it to get too big. And even still, there was a few things that have grown the space, and they're maxed out.
What is your experience with an arborvitae that might have more of a upright, you know, pyramidal shape, columnar shape for privacy or screening of some sort that has a golden hue to it?
Well, it's funny you ask. I have some at my house, and they are absolutely a fantastic plant. The only problem, and I made the mistake, was I have a pergola in the backyard, and I actually put a metal roof on top of the pergola to make it an actual covered area, patio for me to sit under. What I forgot to figure, and I'm a guy who should know better, it provided so much shade on the arborvitae, they're green.
Right, you lose that.
Underneath, yeah. And gold around the outside.
What variety is it?
It might be Techni.
I don't know.
Technigold? It's been a while since I did it, so I honestly cannot remember the exact variety. But I like the golden arborvitae, and with the right amount of sun and no deer, can't have deer. I do not have a deer issue. They do quite well.
Right, right. There's one called Ember Waves.
Mm-hmm.
It gets around 20, 25 foot in height, about an 8 foot spread. Very nice color to it. The new growth comes out like a sunny yellow color. And it might mature a little bit as it progresses into the earlier mid part of spring to a chartreuse green.
Mm-hmm.
But in the winter months, it kind of will transition into more of a bronzy, orangish color.
Mine will stay gold pretty much all the time.
Will it stay
the
gold
outside edge? The only
time.
Place yeah. It's not is where, you know, inside branches where it's not getting as much sun.
Right.
Or where I put the cover. And they're getting, I put them in an area where I knew they were going to get a little bit big. So eventually, I'm probably going to pull them out and replace them. And I'm getting to that point because I've had them now for 16 years. And other than a few bagworms, I've never had an issue. I mean, they've been easy, really. And they're about 12 feet tall, and they're about 5 feet wide.
You know, and if you take a proactive approach with arborvitae, you know, you're keeping the bagworms off and so forth, and the spider mite issues at bay, you know, they'll remain beautiful for you for years and years to come.
I have emerald green on one side of the house. I have the gold ones on the other side, and I have never had an issue with any of them. We've had drought. I've been in my house 17 years. We've had some droughts. We've had some issues, but they've been a good plant. They've just been a good plant.
You know, and when I think of screening too, I really want to put some emphasis on this. When in fact, if you or any homeowner wants to do anything of the sort, do not plant everything in a single row. Offset it.
Yeah, stagger.
Stagger those. If you happen to lose one for whatever reason, it doesn't look like somebody knocked out a tooth.
Right.
You know, you don't have that huge void. Because once they get mature and older and have some size to them, they're very difficult to replace and get that exact size. Mm-hmm. And so kind of stagger them, offset them. And a lot of times, too, I'm not opposed to mixing it up with some other species that might provide to be really good companion plants with some of these items that we're using as a screening effect for privacy. But I want to talk more about that. We got to take another quick break. And we're talking about privacy. You know, what plants are really good to make that screening effect around your home? 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. And if you have anything that you've been successful with and want to share with us, certainly feel free to do that, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And headed our way today, obviously there's some snow in the forecast right now. It's just raining if you're just getting up. And I would just welcome rain. Just leave it as such. And who wants to drive around in the white stuff? If you do, more...
Do not say the S word.
Well, I don't know.
It's not one we would get in trouble for, but we're not going to say snow. Don't say it.
It's in the forecast, Bob.
I know. I know. I don't want to hear it. I heard enough of it last week.
And anyway, if you're just joining us, we've been talking about plants, shrubs in particular, maybe some trees as well, and also ornamental grasses that will serve well from a purpose of screening various areas around your home. You might have a pool area, a pool deck area, a patio. We all value our privacy. It's not that we don't like our neighbors by any means. But it's often in the garden center I'm asked, hey, what would serve as a good plant that would give us a little bit of privacy? And we like our neighbors, but we just want a little bit of privacy. And that's right. Totally understood. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's one of those things we don't think about, but we want to kind of help you think about that. Mm-hmm. If, in fact, you want to do something of the sort this upcoming spring and summer. And we're just running down some various plants amongst many, by the way. We're obviously not going to touch base and tag on all of them.
You can't get them all. There's so many because it just depends on your application.
Depends on the application. And, you know, one that I admire greatly, and you said in a break that it was once preached that they don't do well here, they won't grow here, are white pines.
The eastern white pine.
It's a beautiful specimen, and there are some beautiful specimens over there, if you don't believe us, over at Spring Grove Cemetery.
I have two in my backyard.
A wonderful plant. So I wouldn't be opposed to doing white pines, provided you have the space to do it. They get quite large.
Right.
And then, you know, if you don't have that kind of space to plant something of the sort, or a Norway spruce, then you got to look for something with a little bit more of a narrow profile.
Correct. And there's a lot of columnars out there. We've been talking arborvita. You know, we talked about the golden arborvita that I have. Another one that I use, because when I put the pool in, I really wanted some privacy. Nobody wants to see this without a shirt on. I mean, they just don't. I mean, so it's better for everybody if I block more off, that's for sure. So, but I put in some Hetzi columnaris juniper. And they work great. I mean, I've had to trim them a little bit. This was one of those spots where I had a neighbor who's moved. When I would sit on my patio, the way we were in the cul-de-sac, her front door looked not into my backyard, but it could look between the neighbor's house and mine, because she was a couple down, and look right at us. And she'd be waving at us. And it would kind of bother me just a little bit. And so I put some of the Hetzi columnaris juniper. Very tough, very hardy.
That they are. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. No. So some of the taxes, you know, Hetzi.
Yeah.
That would be one that you might want to consider too. That was one that people would throw out and pull out and dig out, and they wanted them out of their landscape years ago, but they're still an application.
Get a Hetzi Taxus Hicksi.
Yeah,
you can get 6, 7, 8 feet tall, get a really nice hedge, you know, and that may be something close to the patio. So if you have a deck or a patio and you need something close, that's a good one, as long as you don't have deer.
A great plant. We got to take another quick break and give us a call, 749-B105, and also caller number 4 for the last pair of tickets to the Cincinnati Sports and Boat Show presented by Ram. So give us a call, caller number 4, and we have 2 more tickets for you. And also, we want to thank Amber Wells for sharing that beautiful photo of your hibiscus that's blooming in the garage. We caught that. Check it out. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. And our winner for the last pair of tickets to the Cincinnati Sports and Boat Show presented by Ram is Ken. Is it Cummins?
Cummings.
Cummings. Well, congratulations, Ken. You a boater? Camper?
Not really.
No, it's always still a fun time to go down to the convention center, especially on days like today, a weekend is like this. I don't want to be outside, that's for sure. So are you a fisherman by chance? Or
off and on.
Off and on? All right. Well, Alex is going to give you some information as to what you need to do to go down and pick them up at the will call.
He's got
to
earn them.
You got to earn them.
You got to earn them, though.
Bob says you got to earn it. What's your favorite plant, tree, or shrub?
Well, we have some mimosas trees in the house, in the yard.
Oh yeah,
and you know, I love in June when they bloom, and they got a really great fragrance to the tree.
Do you have a lot of volunteers by chance too?
Yeah,
you get a few of those.
That was my question: is there a way to stop all the little seeds from? Producing,
you know, it's pretty tough. Usually, and again, you know, it's an airy tree, which still allows in a little bit of light. I don't know, is it underneath it? Is it a like a mulch bed or is it lawn?
No, it's lawn.
Yeah, most of the time, just you know, continuously mowing will keep them at bay. And I'm not
they just come right next to the house, you know.
Right.
Just, they dig in next to the house.
You know, and I'm not really sure if any of the pre-emergents are that effective with the mimosa. You might try using All Seasons, you know, since most of this is going on in the lawn. All Seasons is a fertilizer from Fertilume that also has a pre-emergent product with it that might help with that.
The mimosa we have in our backyard is a little darker in color, and it doesn't give off as many seeds, it doesn't seem like. We don't have many little trees in the back growing.
Is that is that the chocolate mimosa?
I'm not sure if it's chocolate or not. It's a darker color.
Right.
And that's what I always thought it was, the chocolate mimosa, but I noticed there's not as many seeds. So I didn't know if that's...
You know, I don't know if that's if it's perhaps because it's a different hybridized variety or if it's still young. You know, I don't know if either one of those might come into play. What do you think, Bob?
It's probably could be just random,
right.
But it's just not. Okay. I mean, because I've never seen one not produce as much as the other. They kind of all
kind of almost
what I've seen is they've always been the same. You know, I think he's just getting lucky.
Yeah, they share the same characteristics for the most part, but I don't know if it's because of the variety or if it's still, you know, relatively younger than the one that's more productive. But
gotcha.
I was certainly...
I also got another question about a rose. I bought my mom a rose bush years ago, and we'd always get compliments on it. And the bush, the flower would change 5, 6 different colors throughout its life of each
throughout its bloom cycle.
And I was told that there's one called like a Jacob's ladder or something.
Joseph's coat. Yes, that is the one that will give you that multiple or multicolored look.
And they said that one's only like 4 colors, but I mean, this one I swore had like 6 or 7 colors.
Really?
That it went through.
Huh.
I mean, it was the most beautiful rose bush you can. I mean, it was so full of roses all every year, and you know, it just died all of a sudden one year. The ants got to it.
Oh, that's too bad. Sorry to hear that. But yeah, the Joseph coat is a very popular rose, and it in fact gives you that multicolored look on that bloom. You know, when you see stuff like that, definitely take photographs of it, because sometimes, you know, just Mother Nature has a different way. When you start seeing plants do things that are a little bit unique and not the norm, something sporting's happening. And, you know, plant nerds like us, we always find that interesting and appreciate the photographs of various things of the sort. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure my mom has, you know, some photographs of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always wanted to find another one of them since, you know, it's dead now.
Yeah. Where are you calling in from, Ken?
I live in Price Hill.
Price Hill? You know, check over there at Robin's Florist and Garden Center. Also check, you're on the west side of town, Schwab Nursery. You might also go over to White Oak Garden Center or Northgate Greenhouses. So anywhere on the west side there, you have a multitude of various garden centers to visit. Friedhoff might have rose bushes over there. So,
I didn't know if, like, the acidity of the soil would affect the color.
You know, I would seriously doubt that. I think it would be the variety itself. More times than not, usually when acidity comes into play with bloom colors, it's more towards the hydrangea. But I would not rule out anything of the sort. That, you know, who knows? But usually it's the species. But you know, if you find that photograph, certainly share it with us on our Facebook page, or you can certainly send it to us in our email, and we'll post it. And that's in and around the house at b105.com.
All right.
So, all right, Ken, congratulations. Hang on. And Alex will be with you in just a second or two. And you can get the information on where to pick your tickets up from.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And that's going to conclude the show for today.
Can't wait.
And I don't know where the 3 hours have gone, but they have flown by.
I think it was because we had so many great callers today.
Yeah, some really good calls.
I love it. So just to everybody listening, call in every week. We love to hear from people. I mean, I just love to hear from
them. It's just like you walking into the garden center.
It is.
You call in.
Uh-huh. It's great.
All right. 749-B105 in and around the house. This is Tony Works, and we'll see you next Saturday.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WQB.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.